Ohio sports destination.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Uh-huh.
Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
I mean, he's from Hollywood, brother.
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's do a live on a Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Paul Feinbaum stopping by at 10:33. Bill Bender in the sporting news. Their pre-season top 25 is out. We'll do a little higher, lower with that. And also talk to Bill coming up at 11:33. Your emails, because as you heard, the handsome update anchor there explained Don Waddell's comments will be at 10 o'clock. We will move emails to 11 o'clock today. We got a ton of them to get through, including a caper that we've got to get to the bottom of. So we'll solve those at 11 o'clock, do a higher, lower at 11:20. Yesterday was the match. It was I was prepared for it. I was ready to... I was ready for it not to go well for me, and I felt like NBC was pretty locked in. He'd been playing well. I suck, so those two combinations are usually something that work out very well in his favor, and he was inching closer and closer to finally beating me. I had some great advice from Paul yesterday, who told me that if you say subtle things like, boy, you're really hitting it a long ways, or subtle comments about green speed, that helps. As it turns out, those two things do help. They do help, because then he thinks he's really got to hit it hard and swing hard and all of those things, and it went all over the place. The boy did not start well. I'm happy for me to report, sad for him to report. He went 8-8 out of the gates, so it was kind of over almost immediately on the front nine. Now, he did get it rolling, and we did press on he did press me on the back, and it did come down to a par putt downhill on 18 for me from about, I don't know, 9-10 feet, and I actually hit it, which was crazy. So I ended up beating him by two on the back, and so for one more week at least, I remain atop of the children for at least one more week. But so there wasn't really too much in terms of interesting story there. It was the best time to spend with the kid, and it's something that I never take for granted. I'm one of those guys that when I have free time, I look for the boys and I'm like, what can we do? Let's go do something. So that's the way that it goes for me. But the reason that I wanted to tell the story is we were behind on the front nine. It was kind of a little bit of a bottleneck, and there's really nowhere to go. Like typically I'll bounce around. Like if I see a log jam, then I'll just skip holes. I don't care if I play holes in order, like I'll make it work. But there was really nowhere to go. It was kind of a bottleneck. And the group ahead of us was a foursome, four dudes. And the group ahead of them was, a foursome. And so they were kind of, it was a situation where it was tee box, fairway, green, kind of stacked. And it was like, I'm like, this is going to be 5.5 hours. This is not going to be very enjoyable. And NBC and I were observing, and the foursome ahead of us, I really suck. These guys really suck. All four of them really, really sucked, but they were taking it really ultra seriously, which God bless, who am I? I'm not judging, whatever. They were taking it ultra seriously. But the tricky thing that I noticed was they were playing from the tips. So for those who don't golf regularly, there's usually 4 to 5 sets of tees on any hole that you can play. And for the longest time, the furthest back, I mean, you call the furthest back the tips. Like if you go to Mirfield, the furthest back, that's where the pros play. At Mirfield, that's like another 100 yards on some of those holes. But it goes tips, members, and then I'm not even sure if it's typically like women, juniors, seniors. I don't know the order of those three, or if there are necessarily three different tee boxes for all three of them. But one thing that I know that every course is trying to push now, and Jack Nicklaus talks about this all the time, is to play the appropriate tees. So don't worry about member tees, women's tees, senior tee, junior tees. Think of it. Do you suck? Play up. It's kind of that's it. That's what I would say.
You're not gaining anything by playing the tips and saving your pride or whatever. It doesn't work. You're just not good.
No, you got to be Marcellus Wallace. That's what you got to be when it comes to pride at golf. Forget it. He used different language, but forget it. And these poor dudes were playing all the way back, and they couldn't get off the tee. I mean, it was six or seven shots before any of them even got near the green. And I'm like, you guys are taking eights and nines every single hole here. It was just brutal to watch. Now, they did have some etiquette, and they waved us through, which was cool. And what we ended up doing was just skipping ahead of both groups, and so we just skipped two holes, and then it was smooth sailing. We cruised, which was fine. So we played, I think, 15 or 16 instead of 18, but it was fine. But I just thought that, and I was talking to David Babner about this, the runs a Columbus Marathon. He and I were talking about it out at Muirfield a couple of weeks ago when it was out there, and I said, geez, it's too bad we can't get to a place where you just play, like, if you're 100 or more all the way up, if you're 90 to 100, you're here. If you're 80 to 90, you're here. If you're 70 to 80, you're here. Just go by your handicap and play appropriate tees. But it's a stigma that just cannot get beaten. It just will not get beaten through. These poor guys, like, you. So we finished. We were on 18. I look over. They were on 12.
And they were ahead of you. They had started ahead of you.
They started ahead of us. They started two holes ahead of us, and we caught them, and then they were on 12. They were six holes behind. I mean, it would have been brutal. It would have been a six-hour round to play behind them. But it's that stigma, I think, with the sport where people feel like, well, I'm a man. I'm going to go play the back. No, dude, you don't. Get up.
Yeah, I can't, like, figure out, because it's not that difficult to play basketball on a 10-foot rim. Obviously, if you lower it, you can dunk, but it's not, what is the other
I'll give you the doppelganger
version of that? Yeah.
The only doppelganger for hoops would be, like, if you tried shooting every shot like Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Like, deep. Like, if you never played and you just kept shooting from 25 feet over,
that's what you're supposed to do.
Oh, that's what he's doing. I feel like I should do that. I got to do that. No, no, no. Get in. Layups and rebounds. Find other ways to contribute.
I also, Bo, I have a theory that maybe you weren't so upset about those guys taking long that you wanted to pass them through. So that way NBC didn't get a few extra holes to possibly catch up to you. You didn't beat him on 18. You beat him on 16.
So you think like him, because he said the same thing. He goes, it's too bad we don't have two more holes, Dad. Why do we have to skip those guys? And I'm like, well, we'd still be here. We'd be here till 9 o'clock at night had we not. So that's the way that goes. My wife for Father's Day, in addition to some gifts, she thought one thing that would be really cool would be to, for us as a family, to make pizza. Now, we're not Italian, and we don't have a pizza oven, and not that you need that. We have a regular oven. It's fine. And my feeling on the pizza oven pizza approach, make it at home pizza approach, is it feels like a lot of work for I don't know that it's even going to be as good as what I'm going to get if I go to my favorite joint, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like it feels like a lot, but I was trying to have a good spirit about it. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. Like, she was like, we can do this as a family. It'll be fun. You always do the cooking. We're all going to do this. We're going to put on Italian music. I mean, it fell off a cliff immediately. She yells at Alexa, play Italian music, and it starts doing like, nst, 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 except just Italian. So like Italian, like
Italian music. House music.
Yeah. House music was what it was. So that went right into that. And I'm like, I'm getting annoyed. Bootsy is taking mozzarella cheese and just eating it by the handful. We're trying to get the yeast to correct. So in the thing, she starts this at 4:45 and doesn't read the full, and I always do all the cooking. She doesn't read the full directions. So in the directions, as we're reading through it, so we're doing the yeast, we're doing all of this, let's sit for 1 hour.
Okay.
That's a long time. So let it sit for an hour, covered and warm. Okay, great. Now it's 6:30. So usually we eat at 6. So now all of a sudden we get to, I keep reading, after that hour of sitting, it has to sit for another hour. So now it's 7:30. The dough is sitting until 7:30 at night, and we're all just kind of sitting around staring at each other like, what are we doing?
And it's not something you normally do, so you're sitting there waiting like, hopefully it rises. Hopefully we did it right.
I hope it's good. I have no idea. So it finally gets to like 20 to 8, and I pull the dough out, and I have no experience with this, but I had no idea how thin it actually needed to be. Otherwise, it's really doughy. And I like a really thin, crispy crust is my, that or New York style where you can fold it. Those are my two I like the most. Everybody's subjective. So I'm putting them out in these pizza pans. We pull them out. Mine was, the one that I made was just a glob of like saucy pepperoni and mozzarella, almost like a casserole, quite honestly, more than it was like a pizza.
You sort of made like a weird deep dish.
Yeah, it was just like that's what it was. And there's no room for crusting or any of it. But the funniest part of it is I do the cooking. And so, my wife, she decided that she was going to get the stuff that we needed to make it. So we were trying to make three pizzas. She came back from the store. So she pulls, I'm like, well, we need the mozzarella. Can you get the mozzarella? So she gets it out. It is enough for like a kid's Lunchable amount of mozzarella cheese. It's the least amount of mozzarella cheese anyone has ever tried to put on three pizzas ever.
Everybody gets a pinch.
I'm like, what? I'm like, okay, hon, I think we needed a lot more than this to make this work, but we'll make it work. So despite me saying that, I look over and her and Bootsy have their hands in the cheese and eating it out of the bag. We don't have enough anyway. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's almost 8 o'clock at night and you're sealing the only mozzarella we have. So then she started to laugh, and after it was a mess. The one pizza was pretty good. The cheese one was pretty good, but I stand by my theory. And I told her this afterwards. I said, look, I love the effort. I just feel like making pizza at home, unless you're Dom and you know what you're doing regularly, it's the juice is not worth the squeeze.
Yeah. I just like a lot of meat.
That's what I did.
A lot of times home cooked meals are better, but I feel like pizza, as long as you're going to somewhere that's using quality ingredients, pizza's pretty simple. And so the people who know what they're doing, and if the ingredients are good, it's going to be better from somewhere else than you trying to make it yourself. And I guess it's kind of fun, but because I'm thinking like
it's a lot of work.
Definitely like a lot of work is like a baked good. Usually that you can get at a pretty good quality by doing it at home rather than buying whatever the grocery store has. But pizza does feel like there's so many options out there that it, like you said, the juice is not worth the squeeze. And for you, it really, you kind of had juice on your pizza. It was just sloppy mess.
Just a saucy mess. The one they made was okay with cheese. Have you guys ever tried it, Reese? Have you ever tried to make pizza?
Yeah, it's for me pretty easy.
I think I've done it with like a pre-made
with the dough,
but I've never made my own.
You made
dough.
The dough?
So I guess I'm cheating a little bit because my lovely girlfriend is a professionally trained pastry chef.
Oh, really? Go to hell then. You can go straight. So mine's sucking down mozzarella with their hands out of a sack, and you got a trained dough person?
Yeah.
Come on.
So
that's apples and avocados. That's a cheat.
He's got a pastry chef. I've got a maester, and you're just stealing globs of mozzarella.
I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what the hell we're doing. Well, yeah, that would
Did
be a bit of an upgrade.
Did you try to toss it, too?
No, as soon as he pulled it out of there, it just fell apart. Like, it just, I don't know. And of course, that's all the boys wanted to do. So they got flour everywhere and they're trying to rip it apart and stretch it. I'm going, this is a disaster. I mean, the kitchen afterwards, I mean, it looked like Bastogne in World War II. It was just just stuff everywhere, remnants of things everywhere.
Your pantry just vomited all over the kitchen.
God, just a mess. And the crazy thing is she ordered it from some place in Italy. So I'm sure that was cheap. And it was like you had to like QR code the menu. Mm-hmm. And so everything came with it, except for the only things you had to buy were your toppings and the cheese. That was it.
Okay.
Everything else came.
Was it a good sauce at least?
It was a good sauce.
That's good.
The cheese, the boys liked the cheese. That was doable for them, but I don't know. What are you going
to
do?
J-Lo stands by the best way to actually judge pizza is cheese pizza. It's not like she likes cheese pizza. That's her favorite. But like once you put on toppings, it can be hidden.
So how that's good Portnoy, a pizza is. Right?
Yeah. Portnoy, so you got to get the cheese. Yeah.
So I certainly agree with that statement. I just, my favorite pizza is pepperoni and mushroom. So I just order that everywhere. And then you can compare those ones.
Yeah.
Correct. All you really need is just one control.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need. So you pick one, if it's cheese, it's pepperoni, it's whatever it is, pick the one that you like and then get that one every time. And then you can judge it off of that. But I do think that's fair to do cheese. I think the boys are still mostly cheese guys. NBC, I guess, has graduated to some meats. He's like his Uncle Dom. He likes a little bit of meats, but the rest of them are still. The rest of them are still cheese guys. What are your guys' go-to?
Pepperoni or sausage for me, and then I like to add onion to mine as well. But I also like specialty ones. I'll do a barbecue chicken or a buffalo chicken. I like Hawaiian, too. I know the pineapple on pizza is an argument for some people, but I like it.
My mom is a big Hawaiian.
It shouldn't be, though. Like, it shouldn't be an argument. It should just let people have their pizza preferences and leave them alone, please.
It's my What's tongue. Yours, Reese? I know what it tastes like.
So I really like pepperoni and banana peppers.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty quality topping. You can put green peppers on a pizza. That's a big Youngstown thing. Have you ever had, like, a Wedgwood pizza?
Oh, yeah.
And they
yeah.
just, I mean, they dice them. So I'd prefer peppers to be a little bit bigger. But, yeah, greens on pizza is okay.
Bo, you might like this one. My parents used to order like specialty, like stuffed bell pepper pizza. So it'd be ground beef, mushrooms, and green pepper on a pizza.
I'm for anything. Again, it's all subjective. It's your taste. It's whatever you're going to do. It's and it's completely subjective process. So that's your that's how I spent my my first Friday, and wine afterwards is the way that it went down. Jake Diebler
Always
was on. Always wine. Yeah, Jake Diebler was on with Tim Hall. We'll have a little bit of that. We had a hilarious moment from Mad Dog Russo as well on Stephen A. that we'll have a little fun with. And Jake Diebler said what about the show that he wants to recommend binging? We'll get into all of that coming up. Fun little Thursday edition. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. I just freaked the hell out of someone. Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Certainly the playoff action is here. Not a more rewarding sportsbook in the game than Tipico. You can bet the baseball nightly, bet the golf on the weekends, lots of wins. You can bet on the biggest games, the biggest matches of the summer every single night. If you want to make the most of every game, you got to bet with Tipico. You get 5% cash back on your bets. Enjoy the highest cash back in the industry with the most rewarding sports book. Claim your new sign-up bonus now. Get $150 in protected bets when you deposit $100. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN150 to get your bonus. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. Must be 21 or older. Physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions do apply. Gambling problem. Call 1-800-GAMBLER for more on that. One of the great really sports renaissances that I've seen in the last decade or so, or maybe not renaissance, because I don't know if he ever went away, but the further appreciation of a legend has been what has happened with Chris Mad Dog Russo when he's on with Stephen A. He does this bit where he just walks into the camera and yells at the camera, and he does various things that he's done through the years, yelling at various things that annoy him. Sometimes it's J.J. Redick for being dismissive of Bob Cousy. In the case of the more recent episode, it was something that we made fun of. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago when we made fun of Stephen A. Smith, like the way that ESPN had him walking into the arena as if he was a player, like he was Kobe? So, Doggy had some fun with it. Let's have a listen.
How about him walking into Game 4
oh my God.
With the Celtics on Sunday night in Dallas? Steve.
Oh, I mean, I didn't see this video.
Steve, this is stupid.
Is it going on behind us or not?
You got a guy behind you. You got the cameras. You know, what do you think? You're going to score 36 this night with the sunglasses on? I mean, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. How about going to a ball game with a T-shirt on and a pair of shorts, sitting in the upper deck and having a beer with the fellas? Why are you doing this? Look at this. Okay. And this is laughable. We know you're a star, Steve. Okay?
Okay.
We know you're a star. You don't got to show off. Go sit upstairs watch the game privately.
That's unbelievable, by the way.
Having a beer with some of the fellas.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, there is zero chance Doggy's got a lot of cash. So he lives in Westchester, Connecticut. Like, he's a country club guy. Like, he's not
sitting in section 405 having a beer with some of the fellas.
No, he's not in any sort of extreme section having a beer with the fellas. But I did think that was funny how he took it down. Stephen A. did have some comments this week about Charles Barkley saying he doesn't believe that he's done. And I think we all kind of agree with that there's a situation where Barkley will be back.
It's not that he's lying. It's that it's just I think he's going to get the itch pretty soon if he does try to retire.
I just think money's fun, right?
Yeah.
And what's he going to do with his time? You can only play so much golf. He's in a position of leverage. Madden was in this type of position of leverage years ago. Tom Brady, unbeknownst to all of us, was in that type of position of leverage. Peyton Manning is in that type of position of leverage. If he ever wanted to call NFL games, like he could name his price and move people wherever he wanted to do. We see it every once in a while in the sports broadcasting game, but he's in it now. Whatever that is, I mean, there will be an absolute bidding war for his services from NBC or ESPN. To me, NBC feels like the much more logical fit. If and when he does continue, I don't see him fitting into the way that ESPN does it. I can't see him sitting there with like Stephen A. and Wilbon and Monica McNutt and Andrea and just doesn't seem like what he would do. To me, it feels more like they could build something at NBC around him that would be a once a week deal. Do some playoff stuff, do Basketball Night in America, and that feels like it'd be a win.
And when NBC would do it, I think they would also prioritize it, maybe not quite to the extent that TNT did, where TNT was like, we can push Transformers and let Inside the NBA keep going if they're having fun. But ESPN, all those shows are very situated, that like this one gets its block and then it's over. Yep. And that's the magic of Inside the NBA. And with Charles, is just kind of like they're just sitting there just, you know, shooting the blank around for a little bit, and you get some of that magic every once in a while. And I think NBC, because they're paying such top dollar to get this, they'd be like, yeah, if we get more NBA content, that's what we want. We'll get to the local news. That's the only thing that's going to like cut it off.
It's just not something you, I think, should even try to replicate, the Inside the NBA. I think getting Charles
Barkley.
Unless
you can get it exactly. Can I offer you that?
It'd be nice. I think it's a pipe dream because it feels like Ernie's pretty solid. Ernie is very loyal to Turner and the stuff that they've got him, that they've had him doing for years. So if you can get, because it takes a special broadcaster to do what Ernie Johnson can do, and not many, I think, can, and I think not many should try. Because guarding that cast of characters is what makes it so special.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, I think that's the key to the thing, and it would take that. Yeah, I would, if I'm NBC, I would do our pregame from 7 to 8, play the Sunday game of the week, America's game of the week from 8 to 10:30, and then I would do postgame to 11 and be out. And then you have the hour where you can meander before, because that's really what they're doing anyway. They're not reacting to what happened in a game. You can't spend an hour breaking down one game. They're talking about the league. So just do that before from 7 to 8. And then maybe you're on it, or they could go that from 8 to 9 and have that kind of be the true prime time and run the game from 9 to 11:10 or 11:15. That would probably work too. I would do it. I think it fits for him there.
Well, and I hear you with Ernie, and I think, he is a secret to it, and he wants to work for TNT, but is there any option where they sort of like sublease the show out and like Ernie is still a TNT employee? There's got to be something they can work out, because TNT, they're probably a little bit bitter about the situation, but it's not like cable networks are making a ton of money right now. So anything that can bring in extra cash flow would be something they'd be interested in, I would think.
To your point, that is why Turner is leasing two college football playoff games. So there's precedent for it.
Well, and also there is Kirk Herbstreit working for Amazon.
Yeah.
So that's happened. And before that, at NBC on Football Night in America, they had Dan Patrick paratrooping in. Like, he didn't do NBC stuff except for Sunday Night in a Football. He did that, and he would come over and do that. So, yeah, there is definitely precedent. We've had Jay Billis work college basketball, March Madness for CBS back in the old days. So there's been some
examples. The TNT guys do March. Yeah, they do March Madness, too. Like,
yeah, there's CBS. There's room for it. There's definitely room for it, for sure. Speaking of March Madness, the Buckeyes hope they are there. Jake Diebler was on with Timmy Hall on the Buckeye Show, and Tyvus as well. He gave Tyvus some terrible advice on a show to watch. Just terrible advice. We'll get to that and hear Jake's vision for the Buckeye basketball team going forward. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Here's a listener tweet. Can I tase Common Man in the nuts? Fine by us, but he may like it. Common Man and Tebow.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan. What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
All right, here's what's up on a Thursday edition of the program. New basketball coach Jake Diebler on the Buckeye Show in studio with Timmy and Tyvus last night. Really fun conversation. Touched on a lot of things. And we'll get to the basketball stuff in a second. But I love the family. Love his wife. Love Jake. Love John. Love Caitlin. All of them. Great. I don't know what he's doing here. Go ahead.
Is there anything that you say, you know what, that was fantastic, I should binge watch it? I know. Yeah.
He's doing The Sopranos right now. Tyvus is doing The Sopranos right now. That's an oldie and a goodie.
It might be Entourage.
Oh, yeah. Really? I've never done that one.
I've never done that one either.
And people say that I'm insane for missing that one.
It might be Entourage because I was in college and the episodes were short.
Yep.
So that you could like, I mean, I think I probably saw like three times the whole series.
Yeah, those 30-minute HBO episodes, right?
This.
Crushable.
It's really good. There's during COVID, I was able to watch more TV. Mm-hmm. We got into Game of Thrones and some other stuff.
Okay. All right. If you're curious, if I texted my nephew Tyvis Powell this morning and said, don't do that. In fact, my exact text to Tyvis was, if you spend 1 second watching Entourage, it'll be the biggest wasted 1 second in the history of humanity, was the exact text that I gave him. So many more things. In all kidding, I think it's the most overrated show ever. But I also acknowledge that if you were his, I think the key to it, and this is why I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass because he's new. We'll give him a little pass. He said he was in college when it was on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part that if you were that age when it was on live, it felt like you were like, God, these guys have the life. And that's what it was. It was a window into that life. But when you step back now and to rewatch it, almost none of it's believable at all in terms of it. And it really comes down to just they missed on the Vinny Chase casting. That's probably the biggest issue.
I mean, the whole group of guys aren't that great of actors. So, that's a big problem. And then Ari Gold saves it. Jeremy Piven's performance is the most fun and most entertaining part of it. But I binge watched it when I was in college, and it works when you are in that age age range. And maybe for like a college coach, you're still around those guys. Maybe you can still connect with it somewhat because you're connecting with guys who are in that age range that the show works for. But no, I don't think as you know, Tyvis is what 30 years old. It's probably not worth his time.
You both hit on it. It's you can connect to that when you're in your early 20s, late teens, mm-hmm. early 20s, maybe mid 20s, you connect with that kind of lifestyle because that's something you would like to have. Knowing Tyvis the way I do, he will not connect to this. He will not enjoy it.
So he's watching The Sopranos now. He's like, so he's all into that. So I gave him, I said, read Alan Sippenwell's episodic reviews of that. That'll be incredible. He's like in season one, episode 7. Then I said, when you're done with that, then start The Wire and then come to me in 6 months and I'll give you some more stuff. So I got to take care of
it. Has he seen Breaking Bad?
That's another one.
If he's getting into that type of television, that's perfect. Yeah,
that's another one that's there.
You're making my Saturday show so much easier. Thank you. Thank you for all of this.
You're welcome. Yes, please use it. I always felt what they should have done with that show is just pivoted and made Piven the center. They kind of did, mm-hmm. but just make the show around Piven and have the Entourage guys kind of just be side bits.
Just change it to like Ari Gold LLC or something. Yes. Yeah,
and then have other clients that would cross-pollinate. That would have been what I would have done with it. And it did please me that the movie bombed. That pleased me a great deal. They did have Vet Week up there. This is really cool. So Holtman was doing this. I had a buddy text me. He's like, is this new to Jake? And I'm like, no, Chris was doing this too. And for the failures on the court, one thing that Holtman did a very good job of is connecting with players who played here who he did not recruit. And Jake was a part of that, obviously. He was on Chris's staff. And so you're seeing a similar thing here. And there is a togetherness here. D'Angelo Russell was back in town. Clark Kellogg. A lot of the guys that you expect to see from years gone by. Pros, Jayshon Tate. Those type of guys were all back in town. EJ Liddell, Bryce Sensabaugh, among others. Clark Kellogg's in the mix. That's about all you need to know when you talk about royalty. Jake was on with the fellas yesterday on the Buckeye Show and did discuss what it was like having everybody at vet camp.
You have the amount of NBA current NBA players we had there, some guys overseas, former players who, let's just say, they're beyond their playing days, coming back and spending time, you know, with our guys, mentoring them. Our guys, they lift with our guys, eat meals. It's almost like they're on the team again. Eat meals with them. We did some skill stuff on the court. Then we played. We actually did a little scrimmage. So I reffed. I ref that scrimmage.
Did you throw in some bogus calls just for fun?
Listen, I don't want to sound too biased, but I'm a really good official.
Oh.
And I tried to explain that to some of the officials last year. They didn't like that too much.
Mm.
Sounds like you need to get Jake at some of your youth basketball games.
Gosh, it'd be something. Roll him out there. Just to shut parents up, if nothing else. The other thing that I think is going to be really important, though, and Jake has done this in some of his availabilities, and while he was on Chris's staff, it was a clear delineation in style that happened as soon as he became the interim head coach. And I think it was a great credit to him that when given the opportunity, he viewed it as, this is my shot. I've got to do this exactly the way I want to. And if that doesn't work, great. I don't think he had designs at all when he got the interim job that he was going to be the head guy. I think he was just honest to himself. And that was enough to do it. And that's a great lesson, I think, for everybody. Like, do whatever you believe is best, and oftentimes it'll come out and work for you. So that, in saying that, he has to create kind of a new vision and a new approach for the program. And the fellas asked him about that last night. Here's Jake's answer to that.
Yeah, but it is new. And I think that that's one of the things that's been different is, and, you know, we've had to explain that to the guys who have returned. And I think just this is new. Like, we're doing things. There's differences. You know, this is a different program now. And so, yeah, it's very much new. Got a lot of work to do between now and November 4th, I think it is, when we open up.
It's
with
a big
Texas
game
in Las Vegas.
Mm.
So, but yeah, it's very much new, but that's a good thing. I think it's a real good thing.
Yeah, I said this a couple weeks ago. I think, like, tweak the uniform, little stuff, tweak the uniforms, tweak some of the processes. I think when you get handed the keys to something, you've got to make it your own. And I assume that he'll do some of those things going forward. And I think he should.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Diebler's program moving forward. And so there's just certain things that it doesn't mean that you tear down everything that the previous guy did or previous guy did. Some of that stuff can definitely still be incorporated in it. But like you said, be true to yourself, what you think is going to work. And that's what he did when he took over the job, because we had some sound from him a couple weeks ago where he was talking about what's the biggest difference about being the head guy versus an assistant coach. You make the decisions now. It's constant decisions. Yeah. And so that's what he did when he took over his interim, is like, well, these were things that he was probably thinking these things to himself, maybe had brought them up in meetings, but they had never been fully embraced by Chris Holtmann. And he said, well, it's what I think will work for this team. Go ahead and do it. We saw that it did make a difference. So I think his coaching instincts are good, and just continuing with that of being comfortable with saying, I know this is how we've always done it, or this is something we've always done, but I want to do it this way because I think this is going to work and pay dividends for us, and do those things. Believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's been said a lot that, you know, going through a Big 12 or a Big 10, excuse me, Big 10 slate, or going through your conference schedules, just getting punched in the face every night. And I'm really interested to see, because, you know, I think it's important, you know, with everything that Jake Diebler brought on his resume was that experience in Big 10 play. Like, he assistant for years, he understands it, I think, just about as good as any candidate would have. Mm-hmm. But with the wrinkle of the four new additions, like, now how is that going to play, if it's a factor at all?
You know, it's really interesting when you think about it. Like, Jake is not directly from like the Thad Mata tree, but sorta.
Yeah,
I guess he was here. I think he was here with Thad as a GA. He could have been, but obviously his brother was a standout here, and then he comes back with Holtmann, and there's that. So, and then Holtmann wasn't from the Mata tree, but he was at Butler. So we've kind of been under like this similar group tone feel, really going back to the hiring of Thad, who I've said many times, in my opinion, is the greatest coach in the history of the program. I know Fred Taylor won a national title, but my God, like, what in the time when Thad did it, to do what he did, that run he had is really the golden era. And I do wonder, I think one of the great what ifs is if he does not get injured and he still has kind of the energy that he had, does the program maintain that level? We'll never know. Honestly, you'll never know. But there is a kind of in a similar tone for almost two decades now.
So he was not a coach under Thad Mata, but from 2013 to 2016, he was in some sort of AD administrative career. It's labeled VC, but I don't know what that acronym would.
Video coordinator, I bet.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
That's where he met his wife, who interned for me during that, for us at Channel 10 at that time.
Your illustrious intern list.
My intern program is just incredible. I tell you what, you intern with me, you're either marrying a coach, you're going to end up on national television and dating a former world boxing champion, that or married, or whatever they are now. I guess that's what you get when you intern for your Uncle Bo. We'll do a little sports media conversation. Does Game Day need Pat McAfee more than Pat McAfee needs Game Day? That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only radio station still operating with an active booze cart.
I'm drunk right now.
No, I'm not.
Yes, I am. The Fan.
Ohio sports destination.
Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, friends, I want you to picture this. You're flying at 7 a.m. you pull up to the terminal at 5:30 because you're diligent and you're good and you're giving yourself 90 minutes and you see a line out the front door. Now I want you to picture this. What if you could avoid all of that? What if you could go cannonballing into the lake, s'mores at the fire pit, sleeping under the stars without all of the hassle that comes with air travel? Well, you can if you visit my friends at RCD RV. RCD is having a summer open house and you don't want to miss it. I could not believe some of the pricing that they have on some of the Sprinter type vehicles that they have. They're absolute steals. Huge RV savings all month long. New travel trailers as low as $14,995. The area's widest selection, over 600 new and pre-owned RVs in stock. Start your summer adventure at RCD RV. Visit one of their three Central Ohio locations or online anytime at rcdrv.com. I saw Awful announcing, also Andrew Marsh and others with this. Apparently, Pat McAfee's deal with ESPN is a fascinating one. Remember, he had that huge deal with, was it FanDuel, I want to say?
I think FanDuel or DraftKings, one of the two.
One of them. It was $200 million or whatever it was reported to be. And he got out of that after a year to do this deal at ESPN, to run his show at ESPN. And ESPN did get a deal for his show only. And then everything else that he does there is extra. So one of the things that he did, and I think we all observed when he was put on the show, it was a shot of adrenaline. The first one he did was 2 years ago. They were out at, I want to say, South Dakota against North Dakota State. And he did the one there, was College Game Day. And he became kind of a central fixture of the show, a year ago. He is the very clear, like, next, once they, because the one thing they were always dealing with is, what do we do when Corso can't do this anymore, when he can't come on and put on a headgear? Mm-hmm. Like, who's going to be that guy at the end? And he's it. He was it naturally. It comes very natural to him. He does not have a deal to return to College Game Day this year. This, according to reporting in The Athletic. He is also, of course, he does the wrestling stuff as well, so he's got a lot going on. But From a College Game Day standpoint, if you ask yourself the question, does College Game Day need him more than he needs it? I think we might be getting to the point where the answer to that is yes.
It's possible. It's weird because The Athletic, you know, reading this in The Athletic, they mentioned some of his comments from College Game Day previously last year, where he was referencing a survey The Athletic did of fans and what they thought of College Game Day, you know, and mm-hmm. I think it was a little bit broader about it, just pregame shows in general and stuff about college football. But one of them was about Pat McAfee, and it was like split down the middle. It was like 50% liked him and 50% hated him. But what we know from this business is it doesn't yeah. really matter if people hate you as long as they're still watching. And if that's the key metric to it. But it does feel like he at least brings something out of people for a show that people love, and I have a lot of personal reverence for, but has, yeah, gotten stale over the years, and Corso can only do so much at this point, really. I mean, he's there at the beginning, and then he does the headgear. That's basically all you see of him right now, and they're going to need somebody like that. Nick Saban's supposed to come in, but he's not going to do no. – he's not going to throw on headgear for you. He's not going to jump into the river when they're in Knoxville like Pat McAfee did. So some of that stuff is fun because that's what that show is supposed to be fun. That's why once they got McAfee and said, okay, this is working pretty well, they got rid of David Pollack, because no offense to him, he's not fun.
Was just you know viewers got apathetic towards it, like, oh, Game Day's on, what else is there, you know? And with Fox bringing in Big Noon Kick and trying to make that just a kind of a copy of Game Day, you know, they got Marvin Ingram doing Mark Ingram. Thank you, doing like the goofy guy shtick. Like they needed something that says either people love it or hate it, because that gets you to tune in.
So when you said like McAfee on the 50-50 split, that's actually kind of perfect. That's what you would want. If you're him, you would want that. Half love me, half hate me. Everybody has an opinion. That's what you would want. So that's a home run. I think his tone is perfect for it. I think it fits his brand. But at the same time, I acknowledge, like, how many things can a guy do? I mean, he's got a young family too, doesn't he? So like, how the heck are you going to do this and Monday Night Raw and I just can't imagine his schedule through the fall. So I get how you would have some fatigue, but to me,
sometimes on those Saturdays, he has to get back to Indianapolis and they do their McAfee cast for games too. So he's busy that whole day too.
Yeah. It's crazy. So to me, I look at it and I go, to me, I think Game Day probably needs him more than he needs it at the moment. I mean, Game Day's not going anywhere, but he certainly gave it a shot of adrenaline when he did it. You know, there's a lot going on the media side of things. One of the things that happened last weekend was the UFL championship game. Tom Brady did his little broadcast. He popped into the booth and went in to do it. And Tom's been doing a lot of media recently. He did his jersey retirement in Foxborough last weekend. He did the roast, of course, which was something that was kind of pop culture top five-ish thing of the last 6 months, I would say. It was everywhere. He was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. This was yesterday, and Colin asked him what his approach is and where his headspace is as he's going into being in the lead booth at Fox. Here's what he had to say.
I also think there's still so much more room for improvement, and it's almost like when I was a player, I never felt like I did things the right way. There were games where I'd go in afterward and think, God, I'm the worst quarterback in the NFL. Like, why would they even want me to play quarterback for this team? And I'm sure I'm going to feel that way here at Fox, where I finish a game and I go, God, I didn't even give them what they wanted. And it's a very challenging thing in your own mind. I've asked a few people, like, how do you know that you did a good job? And I think for me, so much of this is going to come down to the preparation. And did I feel like I was prepared? Did I feel like our crew was prepared? Did I give them the best over the course of the week so that we could give ourselves the best opportunity to be successful for the fans? Because really, the game is the show. We're there to add our take on it in our analysis. But it's also, did we feel like we added to the broadcast? And from my standpoint, I'm going to work as hard as I can in the process of it, as you talked about earlier, to make sure that I do deliver, because I don't want to let anyone down. I don't want to let the people at Fox down, and I certainly don't want to let the great NFL fans down either.
It's amazing that somebody that accomplished still relentlessly pursues affirmation.
Because he's just in that upper echelon of like diligence, and he mentions preparation. And I mean, just think about like what we know about him is how he approached football, how he's approached his own personal health. Like if Tom Brady wants to do something, yeah, he's going to do it 100%.
And he wants you to tell him that he's good.
Yeah.
He really craves it.
For a guy that's won so much.
So much.
Just please love me.
I was cutting that sound this morning, and I was at home, actually, and J-Lo was like, who was that? And I was like, it's Brady. And she's like, can't that guy just hang out with his family? Go away? And I was like, I don't know. He wants to do this.
From a Jets fan perspective, yes. I certainly empathize with that. But yeah, relentlessly pursues it. I hope that he has a little fun along the way. You know, like, be prepared, all of those things, but also have a little fun in the booth. I think you want a little mix of that. You just don't need the hardcore analysis all the time. There's got to be a little fun along the way. So hopefully he'll do that when he gets into the booth for Fox. Don Waddell, the new boss, the czar of the Blue Jackets. He's going to have his pre-draft press conference. We're going to carry it for you coming up next. Get some reaction to that as well. Second hour up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If your idea of the perfect radio show is all Buckeyes all the time, then it's your lucky day, Slappy. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Thursday. Don Waddell's presser coming momentarily down at Nationwide. We will carry at least a portion of that. We do not anticipate there being any big announcement in terms of the new coach or anything like that, but the draft is next week. He'll have some comments, I'm sure, on the firing of Pascal Vincent. We want to have those for you and maybe get a little window into what his plan is for what is, quite honestly, we had Porty on a couple of days ago, the most just critical decisions are going to have to be made here over the course of the next month or so in terms of roster retention, who to trade, who not to trade, how aggressive in free agency, what do they do with the draft. I'm curious, very curious, what he thinks of some of these young guys. I thought Porty had a great comment when he's on with us a couple days ago, and he goes, look, like, it's one thing if you draft the guys, you have a particular, you're connected if you draft them, and you want them to develop into what you believe they were when you drafted them. Don Waddell didn't draft any of these guys. So he doesn't have a connection with them. So there may have been a way that Jarmo Kekäläinen viewed a prospect or a player that he does not. They may view them entirely differently. And so with that, it's freeing, right? You're not locked into, you're not beholden to how you viewed somebody in the draft process or via trade. You can look at them for what they are and make your own decisions on it. So I do think there is far more mobility in the roster now than there would have been had you stayed the previous path. So hopefully we'll get some answers on some of those things. And again, that press conference starting momentarily down at Nationwide will carry it for you here.
And fortunately for Don Waddell and whoever ends up being the coach, that, you know, you could see if you look at the Blue Jackets over the last 2 years. Now, there were some extenuating circumstances with injuries and everything, but it just wasn't quite working. So, like what we're talking about with Diebler, like coming in and putting your own stamp on it, you should feel okay by doing that. That, like it's not like it was working before. So we're gonna change some things and figure some things out. So I'm really intrigued to see, yeah, what like the roster composition is once they have a coach in place and what that's going to look like come opening night here in October or so.
Fourth overall pick, and I wonder, you know, what they will be looking to do with Elvis Merzlikins or Patrick Laine. Mm-hmm. I'd say before then, if you can find somebody, yeah, and you're going to have to eat it. You're going to have to eat some of the contract for one or both of them. That can, I think, help to clear up if you've got any limitations with your roster. Like, do we need a player at this certain position? Or, you know, Laine was trying to play center a little bit, or he wants to keep him at the wing. It's like, well, you don't have him anymore, so maybe you draft a center in what I've been told is a deep center class. But
yeah, the other thing that's, you know, Porty illustrated that maybe that because of the changes, Merzlikins is far more locked in to be here than previously thought.
I was surprised when he said that, man.
Me too, but if he talks, I listen. I mean, he's locked. So that part was illuminating to me. I'm with you on the number four pick. Like, it feels like for the first, it's so interesting. It feels like this team forever, when Nash was here, it was like they were so weak down the middle. Like, they could not get a centerman. They tried getting Jeff Carter. That didn't fit. They tried everything to get a centerman. They finally draft one in Ryan Johansson. And they always had wingers who could go. And now they've got, they're really good down the middle in terms of young talent, but they're not great on the wings. So it feels like they can't ever get it all right at once. So, yeah, I think he's open to all of it. Sure, you'd want any transaction you made. If you do a Line A deal, you would probably want it. Let's go live now to Nationwide Arena now. Here's Don Waddell at the podium.
From everybody.
Have at it.
We haven't been able to do this.
Don, when you... I'm not sure how far along you are in your talks with Laine and a trade that has been discussed. Are you of the assumption that you'll be taking money back on that, or how tricky do you think that deal is going to be?
Well, it's too early. Obviously, we're still working with his agent, Andy Scott. You know, he's still in the program. And once he gets out, then, which we expect any day or sometime soon, then, because teams that I've talked about, you know, they want to talk with them if they're going to make a move. So, you know, it's too early to say about money. You know, our hope is that that we wouldn't have to hold money. You know, we want to make a hockey trade if we can, and we'll certainly exhaust every opportunity and every team that potentially has interest in it.
Have you given Andy Scott permission to make the trade, or are you handling all of that?
Well, we've given Andy permission to talk about the player, his condition, and everything else, but no, he's not making the trade.
Joe. Don, can you share a little bit how the process played out these last few weeks and the decision to make the change at head coach?
Yeah, you know, as I said the first day I was here, that you know, Pascal's the coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I've never met Pascal, you know, and so I wanted to make sure I did my due diligence as the general manager to make sure that we made the right decision about moving forward. So, you know, it took a couple weeks, obviously. Met with him multiple times. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was my decision that we just felt that we need to go in a different direction. You know, and I've said pretty publicly that, you know, we've been through some younger coaches for different reasons. And I think right now we need to look at an experienced coach to come in here.
Do you have a couple names in mind already, or are you going in this blank slate? Just interviews are going to be what decides it.
Yeah, no, I have. So this will be the process, just so we know. We're the only team in the NHL looking for a head coach. The guys that are available today are going to be available tomorrow. So we're a group of us are talking to general managers, players, My list is 12 people, actually, right now. We're not going to interview 12 people. We're going to do our due diligence very thoroughly. And once we get to a point that we're all comfortable of interviewing, then we'll start interviewing, whether that be three or four people at the end. But right now, we got a little window here to make sure we get this right. And the best way to get it right is make sure we unturn every rock that we possibly can about anybody that's available that we want to coach this team.
Mark Schoen. Don, how many of the current Blue Jackets players have you had a chance to speak to? And then how much of an impact does their input have on like the Vincent decision and some other decisions that might be coming up?
Players don't have any say in who's coaching this hockey team. I just think that, you know, if you go back in history, there's players that like coaches, don't like coaches. So, you know, when I did have talked about probably 15 players so far, and it's more about how they felt their season went, and you know what how their summer is going, what we have to look forward to for next year. So, you know, I always say that managers manage, coaches coach, players play, and you know that's what we want to make sure the focus for the players is right now, training for the upcoming season to be best prepared as possible.
Hey, Don. Going back to Line A really quick, is it a mutual thing where the team and the player and the agent all kind of feel like a trade might be the best option, or is there a chance that, would you like to talk to him as well about potentially staying?
Yeah, no, I think right now we're all playing nice in a sandbox until we get to a point where, you know, decision has to be made. You know, maybe there's not something out there that makes sense for us, you know, and then we have to cross that bridge, you know. So right now, you know, they've expressed their view, and we said that we will certainly look at all our options, and spoke to Andy again yesterday about this. But you can't rule out if the options are limited or there's no options that make any sense, then, you know, that we'll have to deal with that.
You're looking for a veteran coach. In the event that Joel Quenneville is cleared by the NHL to return, would he be considered?
Yeah, I'm not going to. Probably not my best interest to talk about what might happen. You know, obviously we all know that Joel is still held back by the league. I think I'll leave it to the league to maybe eventually answer that question.
Don, what's your definition of experience in terms of coach? Coach that has 5 years, a head coach in AHL and maybe a couple in the NHL as opposed to a 10-year NHL. Does he have to have NHL head coaching experience?
That's a great question. I believe they do at this point. There's a lot of good coaches out there at every level, including the ex-guys that have coaching in NHL. And I just think, you know, talking with everybody here and kind of getting my finger on the pulse the last 3 weeks, that we need somebody that's been in this chair before that has coached in the NHL. So, and we'll have some good choices there.
All right, there you go. Don Waddell, portion of his press conference this morning down at Nationwide. Lots to take in there. I think the headliner is experienced coach. And his last answer there is someone who has coached in the NHL. He also lined out something pretty plainly there. Boy, he's plain, straightforward. Like, yeah. That's... You ask a question, you're going to get an answer to it, even if it's one with ambiguity, like some of the Line A stuff was. This is the thing that I thought was very interesting, was the we're the only team in the NHL trying to hire a coach, and so we are going to do due diligence and do it right. We're under no hurry. There's no rush here at all. He said he had 12 people on his list. He said that he wants to have someone with previous NHL head coaching experience. So when you start circling or if you're a casual fan, you hear these names, AHL guys, that ain't what he's going for. He wants someone who's coached in the league. To me, it feels like he wants somebody veteran who's been around a lot. We did the Real Truth earlier in the week. Like, is this a guy who's going to be here 5 years? It feels like that's what they're after. Obviously, that's what everybody would be after, but it seems like he's looking for a partner. Quite honestly, from the coaching standpoint, he was asked, will the players have a say? Players will have no say in who the coach is.
Managers manage, coaches coach, players play.
That was very straightforward and direct in terms of what this is going to be. So probably nothing imminent. He mentioned there's 12 people on the list. He is not going to interview 12 people, but he's got a list. They are veterans. They have coached in the NHL. So when you start thinking about possible matches, understand coached in the NHL is, to me, felt like the number one priority. On the Line A side of thing, he did have the, he did have some interesting comments in terms of Line A is almost out of the program. So he feels like that could be something that's happening imminently. And there is permission has been given by his agent to speak to teams on Line A's behalf to try to work out a deal. And I think justifiably any team that would try to acquire Patrick Line A would want to talk to him to see where his headspace is before you decide what you're going to give up. Because financially, it's a big gamble to take him on. And he hasn't, it's been a long time since he's been the player he was as an 18, 19 year old. It's been an awful long time since he's been that. So that's justifiable to me. Absolutely. He also said at one point, he says, right now we're all playing nice in the sandbox in regard to Line A. So they're trying to do the right things to make this work. But at the same time, there's probably a point where this could go in a different way. But right now everybody's getting along well on that side of things. So straightforward, direct from Don Waddell for sure in terms of the approach of the big off-ice issues with the Jackets.
Yeah, and it sounds like coaching-wise, that and it makes sense because that's what we've been talking about. Like, let's bring this down. Let's build it up. We've got some young guys who look promising. Let's see what we can get. He wants to bring an adult in the room that's going, yes, to lead this and knows what he's doing and is confident in his ability to lead an NHL club. And that does seem like the right choice. We'll see what type of guy that is, but it does sound like, yes, he is. I mean, he was pretty adamant that, like, oh, we want somebody with NHL head coaching experience.
Players don't have any say in who's coaching this hockey team was something, mm-hmm, for me. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That's new good. Sheriff. Yeah. But I wonder, yeah, like, because they threw, you know, Joe Quenneville was thrown out there, and I think it could be a minute before the NHL decides to release him. Because, right, he's in that purgatory that he caused, or that was caused when he was part of the Chicago Blackhawks organization. Mm-hmm. I just, my head keeps going back to Mike Babcock, and it's like, boy, we, you know, the candidates out there, so, I don't know.
Those type, and I don't know either. Like, again, I'm not Pierre LeBrun. I don't know everyone who's available, who's coached in the league, who's got great experience, who's connected to him. It'd be silly for me to sit here and act like I did. But I think what the guys you just mentioned, and both those guys have won a cup, so that even limits it even more. But those type, that style without the absurd baggage, that's what they're looking for. They want, I think he's looking for a partner. That's how I took that. That he's looking for someone to walk hand in hand with him on what is going to be a big, long build. And guess what? I'm for it.
And they're going to be in charge.
And they're in charge, and they're going to run it that way. Fine. Great. I'm for it. I'm also for everything that's happening out west in California. Perhaps the greatest Buckeye quarterback prospect ever from the state of Ohio. It's kind of trending that way. We'll get into that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
You know, guys, for me, I was not sleeping well. I did not have the energy. I have this rule in the house that if the boys ask me to do something with them, I just say yes, or I try to. And I found myself wanting to say no more and more and more. And I was looking for kind of a permanent solution for it. And that's when I found my friends at Tri-State Men's Health. Here's something you may not know about low T. Early in your mid-30s, guys start losing 2-3% of their testosterone production every single year. It happens gradually. Before you know it, you just don't feel like the same guy that you did in your 20s or 30s, and there's a solution for it. Here's some of the things that can happen. Decrease in libido, putting on weight, less productivity in the gym, not seeing the gains you used to feel, poor sleep, wake up feeling tired, brain fog, wanting to take a nap. You don't need a nap in your late 30s. Let's go, fellas. There's ways around it. And if you go see my friends at Tri-State Men's Health, they can help you with that. Take the low T quiz like I did on the website. It's a simple 10-question quiz, yes or no answers. It takes 2 minutes. You schedule that consult with Tri-State Men's Health. They will do your lab work, have your results in about 30 minutes. A licensed medical provider is going to review your results with you, discuss your options. They're going to make the decision together with the medical team. And the cost of that appointment is $99. It includes the medical consult, the TNPSA test. If you sign up for testosterone treatment that day of your appointment, that visit is free. It's as big a win as you are going to find. Check them out. TriStateMen'sHealth.com, 800-900-9654. Two locations here in town. Of course, right off of 270, the exit in Hilliard, and then near Medical Mile in Westerville, your two spots to get in there and get it done and get some permanent changes to your health. We got a powder keg on our hands, kids, at the quarterback position. We lament the five that are here now. We can also acknowledge that there's almost zero chance there will be five of them by the time you get to January of next year, the current five at least. Ryan Day has talked about, and we've talked ad nauseum about his situation now. Feels like Will Howard's going to be the guy. Obviously, Devin Brown is right there, and then it's a host of youngsters. Lincoln Keenholz is there. Julian Sayand is there, and Aaron Noland is there. And then you have Tavian St. Clair. And Tavian St. Clair is a senior. Will be a senior he's a Bell Fountain kid. He'll be a senior next year. He is a five-star quarterback prospect. He finds himself this week at the Elite 11 quarterback camp out in Los Angeles. He's winning that camp. He's been the best overall player through a day. He's going to pick up more things as this goes along. He feels like he's going to overwhelmingly be the best quarterback prospect in the country, and that puts him into being the best quarterback prospect in the state of Ohio since when? We've had some good ones. Braxton was a big-time four-star guy. Justin Zwick, Troy Smith were both big-time four-star, borderline five-star guys. But we haven't had one like this where if this goes the way this week, I think this week is going to go for him. It's possible that this kid's going to be the number one player in the country by the time we get to next week. That very well could happen. Depending on what service you look at now, he's the number two player in the country or whatever, but he's near the list of all of them. Universally a five-star guy across all recruiting services. It goes philosophically to how you now go about recruiting the position and managing the position and nurturing the position. He has Julian Sayand there. The conventional wisdom is Julian Sayand is ahead of Aaron Noland, who knows where he is. But Sayand is the one guy through spring football where it was like, oh, he's built different, as the kids say. He's a lot better than you'd be led to believe. He's the guy that was originally, he was the number one quarterback in the last class. He's the one that was originally committed to Alabama. And then when Saban left, they had that conversation. And the conversation went, well, we're pretty loaded here. Are we sure we should do this? And the consensus ended up being, yes, in this day and age in college football, if you have a chance to acquire talent, you do it, and you go from a year-to-year basis in terms of what your roster looks like. It comes down to this simple, complicated question. How can you possibly keep all these people happy? Not everybody can be Arch Manning and sit for 2 years.
No, and Arch Manning is in a situation where it looks like if he sits for 2 years, he's going to get to take over. But you talked about how there's a whole line of guys. So even if you stick around for another year or another 2 years, there might be other guys in front of you. So it's, yeah, managing that is going to be something where eventually, as the Buckeye coaching staff gets through this and they evaluate these guys, they have to be okay with one or two of them or maybe more, whatever, are going to leave. And then maybe they bring in transfers, but you also restock it. The interesting thing in the transfer portal era for me as like quarterback recruiting and mentality has changed is they don't really recruit backups anymore. Any idea of that is completely gone. It is go out and get the best possible quarterback. We will try to get one in every single class. If we need depth guys at a certain point because guys transfer out, we'll go into the portal for that. They're not shy of going into the portal to get a starter. If there's a guy, they just picked up Will Howard. Obviously, Justin Fields came in as a transfer. But that the portal is also for that depth backup type guy. They are not recruiting a three-star to say, well, we need depth at quarterback too, so we'll bring in this five-star and this three-star. No, they'll bring in a five-star, and in the case of this class, because of a transfer, they essentially brought in two five-stars this year, but that's what they're going to do. They want to bring in guys who are going to compete for the starting job, and in the back of their mind, they know that not everybody they bring in now at quarterback is ever going to be a starter at Ohio State, even though they might be at that level where they can play as a starter, but the other guy could be better. And if that guy leaves, they'll figure it out.
And just, you know, real quick on the St. Clair stuff, this coaching staff can't worry about that right now. Mm-mm. And so I think, because there's going to be a bidding war, like whatever is the name, image, and likeness package that has been put in front of St. Clair or his representation, likely going to change after he completes his senior season at Bell Fountain.
Might change after he completes this Elite 11 camp.
Could change next week.
Yeah, I mean,
it's college football, underbelly kids.
It's where we are. I mean, these things used to be done behind closed doors and shadows, and now they're done proudly and with chest out. And it's just it's a very different sport. You're exactly right, though. Like, and I'm sure he's already dealing with all of that. And not only is, you're right, it's not their problem. They can't worry about it. They are worrying about it, but they can't. They're worried about next year. But just the idea, like, of those kids, of St. Clair, San, Noland, Keenholz, like 2 years from now, who's left? One of them?
Hopefully one of them's, yeah, the starter in 2 years. But yeah, none. Where are the other ones?
I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, like, Kyle McCord was here for a long time. He was a four-star, borderline five-star, depending on the recruiting service. Got his 1 year and gone, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the business at the moment, and it's a wild one. But I'll tell you, this Ohio high school quarterback class is nuts. So not only is Tavian St. Clair in it, Ryan Montgomery's in it. He's the kid from Findlay who's going to Georgia. So you got a kid, you got two big time top 100 players in the country. St. Clair's probably going to end up being the number one quarterback in the country, and Montgomery's really good too. One going to Georgia, one going to Ohio State at the moment. Like, we have had a great run of quarterbacks in this state. Drew Aller recently, we've had a good run of it lately after having kind of some down years at the position, but it's really loaded next year on the high school side of things. We're going to do what we do every Thursday at this time. Visit our good buddy Paul Feinbaum coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
When that alarm clock goes off, morning juice comes on. The perfect way to dominate your day or just lay around the house. Morning juice.
Weekdays at 6. The Fan.
Producers, co-hosts, friends, some of those things are true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Thursday, 10:30, we visit with a good buddy, Paul Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Show, SEC Network, ESPN, and Sirius XM, and wherever you get your podcast. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time. We were discussing there's a kid named Tavian St. Clair who might end up being the number one high school quarterback in the country. He's from around here, a town called Bell Fountain. And one of the things we were discussing is the idea of this Ohio State room that has already five quarterbacks in it, including Julian Sain, who's the number one quarterback from a year ago. Of course, who was originally committed to and signed at Alabama. And one thing that I was curious about in talking to people around this program was they are now recruiting and developing almost year to year, as opposed to what will this guy be 3 years from now. They've made that adjustment up here. When you were around the coaches at the media days and the stuff down there, what were you hearing about the way roster construction is happening at the powerhouse programs in the South?
Well, I think what I heard was representative of what you said. You can't be thinking, okay, I've got a junior quarterback, so I need a new guy. Everyone knows this is a reshuffling. I mean, look at so many different programs, like Georgia a couple years ago when they ended up with Justin Fields. I mean, that didn't last, and they knew it wouldn't. Something was going to give. I think the only exception to this rule has been Texas. They got Arch Manning, and he has sat. But again, most of us don't have the lineage of Archie, Peyton, and Eli Manning, and the guidance, and maybe even the financial security. So I think everywhere it's the same. Ole Miss had a couple years ago, you know, stockpiled four or five quarterbacks, and they knew they would lose some. I mean, look at Oklahoma, what mm-hmm. Lincoln Riley was doing there. I mean, they were. It was a revolving door, and most of them ended up leaving.
You have some familiarity. We actually cited the Arch Manning thing, and it almost feels like they're trying to, that family, like they're kind of putting him into a time capsule that it's like the 1990s or the 1980s or 70s. Like, this is the experience, like even from the social media stuff, all of it, not being in the video game, like they are curating a very old school experience for him. And he appears to be on board with all of it.
He is. And I realize some young people may not remember this, but Peyton Manning in the 90s, as a junior, was projected to be the number one player in the upcoming draft. He stayed around for one more year. It didn't really solve very much because his team did not win the national championship, nor did he win the Heisman, nor did his status change. But that's highly unusual. And I remember 2 years ago, somebody was asking me, hey, do you think Bryce Young will come out? Of course he's going to come out. He's the number one pick. He's already won the Heisman. So I think the Mannings are the outlier, but I don't think, as you know, these young guys, they don't really care about all that stuff. They go, okay, I mean, you saw it with yours a couple of years ago. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason why he ended up showing up on the Ohio State campus, but he did, and he quickly left.
Yeah, he showed up a year early. They were like, wait, we'll be happy to have you, but does it have to be now?
That's the way we don't really want you right now.
Can we wait a year? We'd like you to just stay at South Lake Carroll. That's fine. Since last we talked, we had the revelation that the Big 12 is open for business, the naming rights of the conference. And what I said on our show here was you got to do whatever you have to do to stay alive and survive and to try to compete. And they're at least forward thinking in that. But that's fine. But then what stops the Big Ten and the SEC from doing the same? As we've had some time to digest this now, what do you make of what the Big 12 is attempting to do? And do you think that the SEC and Big Ten will follow suit?
Well, they did what they had to do, and all the pot shots of Brent Yormark. I mean, by the way, you knew what you were getting. I mean, you weren't hiring an academician. You were hiring a guy who has been in the entertainment world, and that's how you stay alive. I don't think the SEC and the Big Ten are ready for it yet, but that could change. And the reason I bring that up is, they have all their contracts locked down. There's a debate about the value of live events. I mean, it's going through the roof, but is there a ceiling? And at some point, I'm guessing that's part of the alliance between Petiti and Greg Sankey is, okay, why don't we both put our toe in the water together? Will they command a lot of money? Yes. I don't know why they don't do it, frankly. What else matters right now? I mean, do we really care if our players, if our stadiums, if our leagues look like NASCAR drivers? They already do in a way.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one thing that I took note of, I'm sure you did too, as soon as they're going to lose $20 million or whatever it's going to be a year, and that's their proposal on this thing, like, it's not like any of them are going to take pay cuts, Paul. They were going to have to find new money.
I heard that 3 weeks ago at the SEC meetings about we got to cut expenses. Nobody's going to do anything. I'm just every day another coach comes out and says, this walk-on deal. It's devastating. I mean, the public is not listening to any of this. And listen, we're in a money game, and you have to find the money any way you can. And by the way, they'll cut a deal with some big corporation, and that will end up paying for the NCAA house settlement.
Yeah, there's no question. That's how that thing's going to go. We had a conversation yesterday. We were discussing, some of the best teams. The most talented Ohio State teams, oddly enough, are not ones that win the national championship. It's just the way that it's worked. It's kind of an odd quirk over the last 40 years or so that the most talented ones don't. Is there a program, a team that you covered that you watched that checks that box of most talented that, for whatever reason, didn't get a bite at the apple, but in the new 12-team playoff will?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple of Alabama teams that lost in the championship game that probably were among the most talented. Georgia probably has some frustration, that 17 team. The only one I would say that probably didn't get the opportunity was last year. That's one of the better teams that did not make the playoffs. I know there's some good Ohio State teams that didn't make the playoffs. I mean, listen, people are getting tired of the 2015 comparison, but I think that's probably the best way to go. And throughout history, there's always been great teams that just run into that Waterloo. If you think about the 12-team playoff, I mean, is there anyone who's benefited more than James Franklin? He's the only one that I don't really think deserves to get into the playoffs because he's never shown an ability to do anything other than exactly what he's supposed to do, but nothing extraordinary. So he's surviving as a result. But I think for Ohio State and a Georgia, it's a good thing because they have found their ways. They have been screwed probably more times than any other.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up. I know you know this just for our audience, though, and just a reminder for our audience. When it came time for the Big Ten to decide, like, who are the rivalry teams that you're going to keep, Ohio State wrote down Penn State and Michigan. Penn State wrote down nobody. They did not want to play Ohio State regularly. They did not want to play Michigan regularly. So Franklin, to your point, he's like, yeah, we're good. As soon as we can not play them, we're unrivaled. We're not going to play any of the teams that we've been playing for the last 30 years.
I'll tell you something, though, as I think about it, we're knocking on the door of the two-year anniversary of Southern Cal coming in. You talk about a program that, if you go back to the end of June 2 years ago, they were on top of the world. And I was talking to Bruce Feldman yesterday, who's really close to that program. He was talking about the two top 10 defensive linemen that they've lost this week. And I'm beginning to wonder if that program is going to have more trouble fitting into the Big Ten now, because I think, as I've said often, Lincoln Riley is really over his skis as a coach at that level. And I don't know if they're going to win eight games this year. And at some point, forget the playoffs. Is it time to really think about Lincoln Riley being a bigger bust than any of us could have ever dreamed when he went out there a couple of years ago?
Well, you bring up that anniversary. It's been a couple of years since USC came in. At that time, you would have said that they're coming in guns a-blazing. You know, you'd compared it to Florida State going into the ACC when Bowden finally did that all those years ago, or you know, just coming in, right? The way Texas, quite frankly, is going to come into the SEC with just kind of a roster that's ready. And it's really Oregon. It's not them. It's Oregon that's the team that's coming in ready to roll. Paul, I'll get you out of here on this one. All SEC final in the College World Series. The SEC has put a great onus on baseball and softball, and we've talked about that in the past. What made Tennessee say, and your alma mater, what made them say, we're going to be great at baseball now, and what changed?
I think they looked around, and in the SEC, it all started with what is the most important thing, and that's your facilities. I want to give credit to someone, though, for what's going on right now in Omaha, and he's the new athletic director at Ohio State. Ross Bjork hired the coach at Texas A&M a couple of years ago, and he took him from TCU, and it was a big deal in the baseball world, and not a lot of people nationally were paying attention, but look at that program right now. And he gets criticized for the Jimbo Fisher deal, which really wasn't his doing. He inherited it, but Schlossberg, the coach at A&M, really was one of his better hires.
Yeah, we like him so far. It's been a fun couple of months. Great talking to you as always, my friend. Thanks for your time, Paul.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll hit a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
Saw this tweet from Overtime. They cover various basketball things. Let me know if you notice a pattern in it. Team USA's U17 class is crazy. Roster includes Bryce James, Keon Anthony, Aaliyah Arenas, the Boozer Twins, Taj Ariza, and then AJ DeBanza and Caleb Holt, who are recruits. Number one in the 2025 class for AJ DeBanza, and Caleb Holt number three in the 2026 class. Many more. Thing or not a thing?
So LeBron James, I'm guessing Carmelo Anthony, Gilbert Arenas, Carlos Boozer, Trevor Ariza.
Yep.
All pops.
Well, listen, like,
bunch of Nepo babies, if you ask me.
When I talk to my boys, especially NBC is starting to come around to it, but like, what do you want to be? I want to be a pro basketball player. I'm like, listen, dude, genetics. There's some stuff we're up against here, and this is part of it. Like, that's pretty good lineage there across the board. I think what's kind of cool is, like, what I think it's pretty remarkable, though, is like LeBron, Carmelo, not sure about Boozer's situation or Reese's, but LeBron, Carmelo, like, they came from nothing. And that was the hunger to get out that drove. Their kids obviously would have everything, and it appears they still have that same hunger, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. Like, that's really good genes, because I'm where you are, Bo, and not in terms of children, but when I do have them, it's going to be like, you did not win the genetic lottery.
Not for that sport.
Unfortunately, for most. Well, in my case.
I wonder, too, as we get into the, you know, the generational wealth is now completely there for basically any NBA player, but also just about any professional athlete. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get to that top level, you're going to have as much money that you're ever going to need, and so are your kids. And also the interest in sports science and taking care of your body and everything, that, like, are we going to start to see more legacy players in these pro sports because that's just the world that they come up in. And so they're already predisposed genetically to have some advantages because of who their dad is. And they're just the push and the drive, like you were saying, is there from, in especially this like a U17 team. These guys are probably just ready to be in that kind of stuff at that point in their life.
You know, the other thing that's interesting about this now that I'm thinking, because one name that I didn't see on here is Darren Peterson, the Ohio kid who plays for Huntington Prep, who we talk about all the time. He's not on this team. So they have 9 5-stars and 3 4-star prospects. I wonder why he was not on this team, because he should be on this team. So I'm wondering if did a kid who had a fancy last name, I mean, I don't know. I just wonder, like, did a kid who had a fancy last name usurp Darren Peterson? Darren Peterson's number 3 player in the class. That AJ DeBonsa is number 1. Then
is
Cameron
he U17 still?
He is. Yeah.
Okay.
He's going into his senior year in high school. And Peterson is the number 3 player in that class. Well, maybe he's not. I guess it's possible. Maybe he's already 18.
I don't know. He could be 17 because it's U17.
It's
under 17. Right?
Well, 17 and under.
Is it 17 and under? Is that
17 and under? Yeah. So like 10U, like we're doing 10U, 12U lacrosse and stuff. So it's 17 and under. So maybe he's already 18. Maybe.
I was 18 going into my senior year of high school.
Yeah. I'm just trying to look right now. Speaking, we'll just do this and I'll Google in a sec. Speaking before the start of the Travelers Championship, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan said the difficulty in finalizing a deal with LIV Golf is not a reason for concern. Quote, with complexity comes opportunity. There are a lot of different factors at play, but nobody who is having the conversation is unaware of the complexity. And everyone, I think, is embracing the fact that there are obstacles and things you've got to overcome in a complex situation. Adding, quote, we have the right people around the table for us, and they do as well. It's been more than a year since the PGA Tour and the PIF of Saudi Arabia announced plans to form a partnership. Thing or not a thing?
Not a thing. It'll be a thing when they announce it. And Darren Peterson's 17. He doesn't turn 18 until January, so he would be 17. So he was kind of jobbed not getting on this thing. Maybe he didn't want to. Who knows? I would think that he would have. But yeah, I think on the LIV PGA thing, like just tell me when we're done, when we're good. And my hunch is the biggest problem here is going to be the guys who took the bag trying, if they're going to come back in to play regular PGA Tour events, how do you make it right for the guys who didn't? Rory, Tiger, Scheffler, Thomas, Spieth, the guys who stayed, like financially, how do you make it right for them? Do you just all write them all a check for $150 million to make them happy? I mean, how do you make them right for holding firm? How they get whole? I think that's what makes it so complicated.
Yeah, because, I mean, the basics of it, of like, okay, you have golfers, they can play golf tournaments, and you guys figure that out. But you're right, that is probably the hardest part, and how much does LIV want to keep investing in it? Because the PGA is not going to have that money to make those things right, so that would have to come from the LIV side of it. And what do they get in return if they're asked to write another check basically to own the PGA when they're the ones with all the money right now? But the PGA is obviously still the main factor, at least in America, for golf. You know, I don't know fully works internationally, but
in order to like fill out like their tournaments, like they gave like marginal PGA guys like $15 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
So like how do you make that whole?
This one just came across the timeline from Pete Thamel. Sources, the Collegiate Commissioners Association took a straw vote yesterday and voted down a June signing period in college football. They are expected to confirm that notion today. That leaves 2 signing periods, February and the week prior to the conference title games. Pete Thamel goes on to say, high school coaches in states like Alabama, Tennessee, and Georgia were outspoken against adding a signing day in June. The June window would have begun in June of 2025 for the class of 2026. Thing or not a thing?
Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around why the coaches in the South wouldn't want this. What would be their reason for not wanting this? For to have this out of the way for your athletes, to have them to be able to sign and be done.
And then they're not worried about like continuing recruiting in the season.
I don't understand what they would not want it for. To continue to do it in this way, I mean, the calendar is just so broken. I'm shocked that they didn't get this done. This seemed like a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's just trying to read a little bit more into it. It's not the best move.
What's the motivation?
Logically, it's just... Yeah, like Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia are outspoken against it.
And you're not talking just the
week. Why?
Yeah, it's the week prior to the conference title games, which is, has been an issue. But then, like, with the 12-team playoff, how many teams are going to be involved? And, like, how busy can they get? That's what we saw. We saw that this December still.
A June period, it feels like, frees everybody up from the other two. And the other two are kind of busy times of the year. June doesn't feel that busy for high school coaches.
Just get rid of December and just do June, February.
Yeah. Before your senior season and then after.
And then after. That solves it. Berm with this comment. This is so dumb. So he's locked into this world.
That's a thing.
Dumb, and that's a thing.
Are college
that's
coaches worried that if kids, maybe the high school coaches are worried if kids sign in June that they're not going to care about their senior season?
That Which I don't know if you could come up with a more false statement.
Yeah.
No, I think that's the only thing I can think. Yeah. Yeah.
There's some logic to that, as little sense as it actually makes, because, I mean, even if you sign a kid, the loyalty goes away pretty quickly. I mean, it can. All right, third hour of the program coming up next. We hit your emails. We open up the mailbag. Boy, there's some good ones in here. Some people not happy with me. We'll have some fun with it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only radio show Ryan Day listens to when we're holding him hostage, making him listen to a radio show. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. The best hair on the air.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Well, my friends, tomorrow's the first day of summer, and the Fan at 10 TV asking Central Alliance to step up and help their neighbors stay cool. Our Beat the Heat fan drive, sponsored by Newman Roofing and in partnership with Life Care Alliance, kicks off tomorrow. It's the hottest week of the year. Many Life Care clients cannot afford air conditioning, have medical conditions that are worsened by extremely warm temperatures, which we're currently experiencing. You can help by driving through and dropping off a new box fan at our studio, 770 Twin Rivers Drive, between 11 and 6:30. If you're heading down between noon and 2, get a shaved ice from Kona Ice. From 4 to 6:30, get a grilled hot dog from LA Catering. Anyone who donates tomorrow will be eligible to win a couple of tickets to the Cardale Jones Celebrity Softball Game. For more information, visit 971thefan.com. This is today. It's happening now. It's happening now.
It is.
It's happening right now.
They got the Big Ten out front. You can just pull up right here.
It's happening right now.
Do it. Go. Donate. Bye.
Let's go. Get it done. Get out there. All right. Let's hit the mailbag, kids.
Box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. And you've got to get it out. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present emails.
And if you're watching on the YouTube, there's a lot of them. There's a lot here. So we'll do our best to get through them. And then some we may have to push to next week. Let's start with Tony P. The subject is schedule. You continuously bash the schedule of the team you are covering, Ohio State. How do you not see it? Do you want them to just run a gauntlet of a schedule? That would do a few negative things. It would beat them up. We have a longer schedule. It would run the risk of losing unnecessarily. The people who listen to you and the fans are the ones who are supposed to be serving have no problem with the schedule at all. And I've never heard anyone say anything about it ever. I used to love the show, but over the last year, it's getting hard to listen to. In my opinion, I think you're being too much of an outsider vibes with all this. I need to be entertained talk. There does seem to be a clear delineation in Buckeye fan in terms of what they want out of their Buckeye football season. There are some that are in Tony's camp who want 63-0 every game. Let's go win a national championship. Nobody's close. That's fine. I do wonder if those people actually like the sport. Or do they just like beat down after beat down after beat down? There's a redundancy to it. But I acknowledge that it exists, that there are people who just want to play the cupcakes all the way through. And Ohio State feels that way as well, because that's what they did with this year in the schedule. And when they replace people in the future schedules, they're doing that as well. My view on this, in terms of the I need to be entertained talk, no, I like being entertained. I'm a fan of interesting. And the one thing I think about the Buckeye football schedule, because you have cupcakes built in the bottom of this league, because it is so bad, you don't have to play 1AA teams. You don't have to play 2 MAC teams in the course of a month. I mean, their first month, they have a bye and they play 4 cupcakes. Like, you don't need to do that. I'm not saying you got to go play everybody non-conference. It's a behemoth. But there should be a couple of those because your Big Ten schedule allows for it.
Yeah, I don't get that line of thinking. But like you said, I know there are people out there that like being associated with the winner. And no, I don't like Ohio State football so I can wear Big Ten championship shirts and national championship shirts and say it to other people that, hey, my team's better than yours. It's an entertainment product. That's what sports are. And I want to be entertained because there are a lot of Buckeye games that, sure, you might feel good about yourself, but it's not doing anything for you on the screen. It's not actually entertaining you. And if you weren't into the team, you wouldn't be interested in it. So that's where I go, because that first month this year is going to be tough. And no, I don't care that much about winning 63-7 constantly. And in the world of the 12-team playoff, I think that it's going to be different.
That's
how things are going to be evaluated. Everybody is so beholden to, you have to be undefeated in college football. And it's like, yeah, but because college football is built so inequally, that what has undefeated always meant in all those years? Look back at years where teams were undefeated. What did their schedules look like versus teams that did go through something like that of a gauntlet? And that's where I want it to be, because in the NFL, most of the time you get a good game because, oh, can every game be a top 25? Well, in the NFL, every game's a top 32 game.
Mm-hmm. If you're a fan out there that's in agreement with the emailer, I wonder if you've said in the past, oh, I can't believe Alabama's playing that cupcake before the Iron Bowl. Why don't they play a real game? Like, what are we doing with this? If you're interested in back-to-back-to-back-to-back weeks of 40-point blowouts, we're not the same. And I don't think there's anything I can say to convince you otherwise, because I look at these schedules and I go, ugh.
Yeah, it's tough. But look, I acknowledge that side exists, certainly. This from, it looks like maybe a William Patton, I think. The subject is TV golf. Hey, please don't need to hear your reporting on Roy or Scotty playing now. Keep quiet on an upcoming TV event about to watch. Just because you have Peacock spoiling the upcoming soon ahead of. Enjoy the morning show, though. Just frustrating. Thanks. I have to imagine this is from last week at the U.S. Open on Friday. So were they doing tape delayed somewhere else? There must have.
I don't know, but you can't say that to a sports show about live sports.
No, I don't think so.
You just can't.
We're going
to want us to say, like, in respect to all of our wonderful listeners who may not be watching this thing right now, we can't talk about it.
It's like, Bo, you sometimes, you know, you're at a kid's game and you try to record the Buckeye game.
Yeah.
And you say, I'm not going to look at my phone. Nobody come and talk to me about it. And, like, so you don't turn on the sports radio station on the way home from your kid's game if you don't want to know it. We're going to talk about live sports.
Yeah. I didn't realize that they were trying to do a tape delayed. I just don't know what he was hoping to get. I
mean,
Golf Channel late at night.
Like, I think on Peacock you can start
it seems like he doesn't have Peacock,
so he was just saying he's going to start.
He must
or was he just going to start whenever the terrestrial coverage was going to start, but then you wouldn't see this stuff. Whatever.
Anyway, I don't know. This one from Roy, loyal listener. It's a long one, so I'm going to paraphrase some of this. Roy, the subject is end of the year seventh grade banger foiled. His younger daughter finished seventh grade the week of Memorial Day. They ended the year on that Wednesday. She goes to a small private school in Virginia, so I changed the names, but the story was epically familiar to anyone who went to middle school in the 80s. 2 weeks before the end of school, his daughter started laying the groundwork for a two-day sleepover. So I'm familiar with these type of things, what they're trying to angle at here. One of her good friends was having. We were leaving for a huge golf tournament Friday in North Carolina, so she said she could only stay the first night, but she was clear it was a two-day event and kids could come and go as they pleased. Obviously, this did not pass the smell test for either him or her mother. 2 days before the supposed sleepover, Rome fell, he wrote. Apparently, the girl who was having the party in one of the middle school group texts very intelligently said, oh boy, I'm going to bomb the school, jokingly in a text message. Another parent saw it and sent it to the principal, and the girl was suspended for the final 2 days of school. Not the good part. Apparently, her parents were in Germany, thus the whole time there was no sleepover. There was going to be a two-day seventh-grade banger straight out of Dazed and Confused where kids thought they could come and go as they pleased. So the mom got the email because the girl wrote the stupid text, and it canceled the party. She got wind of it. So apparently they'd been plotting it for over the seventh-grade banger for over a month when the plans went south. The girl hosting the party was furious. Parents took a screenshot as a little joke. More hilarious was the outrage of many seventh-grade boys, I bet, trying to figure out which parent was the snitch. It can only be described as the most seventh-grade thing ever. One kid sent a screenshot and a spreadsheet where he described all possible suspects. Fortunately, my daughter's name said best friends. No way, she squealed. This is what they're capable of. This is what they're capable of at this age. It's you got to be on them all the time. Roy Alto's details in here. One of the ways he's able to monitor what his kids does. On a serious note, I don't know the right answer for this on how much you should be looking at your kids' phones. My approach to it is I look at it whenever the hell I want. Like, that's my approach. Now, I don't, my oldest is 12, so it's not like I'm infringing on the privacy of a 16, 17, 18 year old. But even honestly, at that age, I would feel very comfortable just saying, like, dude, under my roof, I'm going to know what's going on. And let's make sure you're behaving in the best possible way. But that's a 2-day sleepover with no parents in the seventh grade. That's a hell of a plan.
That is quite the plan. It does seem like something, too, or like, I don't have kids, but I was a kid at one point, and I would think most parents around their children would know when their kid is trying to be sneaky or doing something, especially at that age. Kids aren't very good at hiding that kind of stuff, and that would seem the time to, like, check in on what's going on.
I mean, who's paying for the cell phone?
That's my approach.
Who's got the financial responsibility of this? So it would behoove, I think, the kids in this instance, and that's the thing, they're kids, to not be idiots.
But yeah.
They're kids, so.
I mean, can you imagine that green light? Like, your parents are in Germany. Like, it was almost a, what is it, this is the end? Is it Project X?
Project X is the big, the rager that the kid throws at his house. It gets, like, the cops call and the guy shows up with a flamethrower.
That, like Entourage, is really fun in high school and a little bit into college. But it's, you watch it now, and I still, like, enjoy it because I have some nostalgia for it. But, like, I don't think it's going to hit for somebody in their 30s if they're just like, hey, watch this movie.
This one from Sam. Sports Park is coming. Please read. He writes, Bo, I was listening to the end of the show while watering flowers and wanted you to know that a friend of my wife and I is building a 57-acre sports complex. Brad Jennings is his name. He's also a big player in the OSU Jennings practice facility for wrestling. The sports complex sounds like the perfect fit for you and the boys. I believe it's opening this fall. Lacrosse is one of the featured sports. Please check it out, Jennings Sports Park. On a side note, we went to the groundbreaking this year. Got to meet Braxton Miller at the event, which was pretty cool. The complex may save you a ton of travel. Yeah, let's go. Can we do it now? Where's this at, I wonder? Jennings Sports Park. Either way, it's not Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah, there you go. You have to go to Rockford, Illinois. Oh, that'll be a fun drive.
That's next Friday. 7.5 hours.
Good luck.
Buckle in. This from Vince. The subject is 12-year-olds. Heard your description about 12-year-old boys being jerks. I coached both my sons in baseball. When my oldest was that stage, he's now 30, I coined a phrase to describe it. They have been given their testosterone starter kit. That's it exactly. That's it exactly.
They don't need the low T injections. They've just got it. And it's coming through, and they don't know how to manage it.
They can't take it all in. They're drinking the testosterone out of a fire hose. Is what's happening, because everything is a challenge. I'm tougher than you. I'm better than you. Like, I can do this. You can't.
I mean, I can jump and touch this. Can you jump and touch this?
You can't do this. I'll bet you $5. I'll bet you $5 I can do this. That type of nonsense. This one from Shannon. The subject is Bridge Park. Wants to know, I plan on taking a friend to eat and walk along Bridge Park this Saturday evening. Any suggestions on where to eat in Bridge Park or Old Dublin that is more casual and reasonably priced? Yeah, there's a ton of options there for that. There's Cap City there. Local cantinas there. Kitchen Social. That's relatively moderately priced. There's all sorts of stuff there.
Yeah, there's tons of good stuff. Is it a...
Stumble into it.
I think last time we were out there, it was in the historic Dublin part, but was it a Harvest Pizza or something like that? We enjoyed our meal there, and that was, reasonably priced.
There's great stuff across the bridge, too.
Yes.
I mean, that's the cool thing about that area. I think Dora's most of the day, if not the entire day, so if you don't find anything you fancy on one side of the river, there's the other side of the river, and you can have a beer in your hand while you make that choice.
All right. I'm looking at this next generation of sports park is
coming by Alum Creek.
Okay. Oh, so, boy. So it's perfect. 6 baseball softball fields, 6 to 18. All 10 fields have synthetic turf and lights. Year-round playable. Got to be that. Pixel cameras, multi-level pavilion, heated batting. So it looks like this is more – they do have lacrosse. Well, yeah, you can play lacrosse on a baseball field. So there they go. They're coming.
Bo, just slide that to whoever's in charge of this and be like, hey, what about this location?
I got an idea. Maybe instead of going to Chicago twice in a 3-week period, maybe we just play one here.
Hey.
Hell, we'll even host it.
Yeah, the Bishop and Friends Invitational.
That's right. Boy, the money in that, boys. We could take this whole thing to another level.
We'll get your kid in with the Ohio State coaching staff. Don't worry. Just sign the check.
I got Nick Myers on the speed dial. We're ready to go. So many. We're going to have to push some of those to next week. But keep the emails coming. It's always fun to get a little window into our listeners. A little higher or lower coming your way next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. The Fan. Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
And it's a Mitch Cardale Jones celebrity softball game. Why picnic when you can schmitnick? It's presented by Monogram Homes and the U.S. Air Force. It is Saturday, July 20th, 6:30, Huntington Park. Current Buckeye players versus former Buckeye players. Cardale Jones, one of the captains, and Becca Buka, one of the other captains. Tickets are $10 and available today at BuckeyeCruise.com for more information on that. It is time for a little higher or lower. Hit it, Reese.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
Sponsored by The Waterworks. Trust the pros at The Waterworks for all your plumbing, drain, heating, and cooling needs. Visit thewaterworks.com today to get started.
Damn Bill Bender, who we'll have on at about 12-13 minutes, has on the sporting news the preseason top 25. A little too early post-spring preseason top 25. And, well, he must hate Ohio State. Dastardly Bill Bender.
Here's what I would say. I love what Bill did here. So if you, the link that you shared has a page that Bill curated at the Sporting News that has all of their listy stuff. It's all in one place.
It's tremendous content.
It's great. So fantastic job out of Bill and fantastic job out of them. And now that damn Bill Bender did what?
Hating ass Bill Bender has Georgia, the top team in the way too early post-spring preseason college football top 25. Ohio State's number 2. Texas comes in at 3. Higher or lower for the Longhorns there?
I'm glad you did what you did there because I do think that Georgia will start out 1. And I think they will stay 1. I do think they'll lose because their schedule's brutal. But I think they deserve to be because they have a quarterback certainty, and we do not yet. We know we don't know what we have at quarterback. We just haven't seen it. We've seen Will Howard play the most, but it was at Kansas State. So we just don't know what that is. So I think while Ohio State has the most talented roster in the country, and I think it's by a decent margin, Georgia having Beck back, who probably will be the number 1 pick in the draft and the Heisman front runner. That's an appropriate 1 in my view. Texas at 3, I would probably flip Oregon and Texas. I would probably put Oregon 3 and Texas 4, although it's always those four. It's always Georgia, Ohio State first, then Texas and Oregon in some order, and then it kind of gets muddled from that point on. Is Texas ready to be great? Are they ready for it? I mean, it feels like Sark's got it going differently than some of the other guys have been there. Obviously, they got big-time play at quarterback. They did well in the portal. They've recruited well. They have a ton of talent. They feel like they're, if ever, now would be it. But we just haven't seen it since Vince Young and really Colt McCoy. Like, it's been 15 years since we've seen them kind of maintain a great season. So I give Oregon a little bit more credit than them, but not by much. You have to acknowledge the Texas roster.
Yeah, I think they're in a really good spot joining the SEC. But you mentioned Colt McCoy, since they were able to like fully put it together, and Colt McCoy got hurt in that game, so it's really hard to tell exactly what happened. But they got trounced by Alabama in that, and then Oklahoma kind of owned them for the next decade or so, and now they're kind of back on track. But it's another change to what they're up against, and you know, changing things for them by going into the SEC. So they were able to knock off Bama last year. But are they going to be able to do that against the other SEC teams that they will be going up against? It's really going to be interesting to see what the records shake out like in the SEC this year and who's playing for that SEC championship at the end of the season. But Texas is definitely one of them, and because of that, they're correct at number 3. But I see what you're saying about, like, are they ready to take that mantle, because they've been a program that has always been there, that, like, man, it's such a great job. Can they do it? And they've cycled in and out of coaches that have shown some promise at certain points, but never been able to fully put it back together. Is Sark the guy to finally bring it all back?
I just think this guy's an 08. They went 12-1. Their only loss was to Texas Tech on the Michael Crabtree play. That kept them from playing for the national championship in 08. Even though they beat Oklahoma, Oklahoma played Florida for the national title. Florida bombed them. So in 09, they're undefeated. So that's McCoy's junior and senior season. Junior season, they kind of get screwed out of playing for the national title. His senior season, they're undefeated into the national championship game against Bama. He gets hurt on the first drive.
Mm-hmm.
They go right down the field to go score a touchdown, and then he gets hurt, and then that's it. And then they go 5-7, 8-5, 9-4, 8-5, end of MAC. Charlie Strong at Texas went 6-7, 5-7, 5-7.
Oof.
Imagine that, at Texas. Herman goes 7-6, 10-4, 8-5, 7-3. He's gone. A lot of the off-field stuff contributed to that. Sark goes 5-7, then 8-5 last year, 12-2. So they haven't won. They've had double-digit wins twice in 15 years.
That doesn't, I mean, I would not have believed you if you told me that stat dry. Like, just like, hey, Texas hasn't had double digit. They've only had two in the last.
Wow.
Yeah.
The great Bill Bender of the Sporting News, again, wonderful Ohio Bobcat, but hater of your favorite college football team, has Oregon at 4, mm-hmm. Notre Dame at 5, Ole Miss at 6, Florida State at 7. Higher or lower for the Seminoles there?
So this is where I think that this group is interesting. Notre Dame 5, Ole Miss 6, Florida State 7. My hunch would be, and I know they've had an exodus of talent, but I still think there's probably a lot there, and I think the coach is a hell of a coach. I would probably put Alabama somewhere in this mix based on the way that Saban has recruited. And they lost some guys, sure, but not all of them. They still have a lot of talent there. They have the quarterback back. Offensively, they should be better than they were a year ago. Florida State, that's DJ Uiagalelei, so he's starting over at Florida State, his third college, back in the ACC where he was with Clemson. Ole Miss with Jackson Dart, they feel like the team that it's so much so soon, but I actually think Lane's been building to this a little bit, and I think he's a hell of a coach, so I think Ole Miss is appropriate. Florida State I would drop down a little bit, and then Notre Dame, does Marcus have playmakers? He's got Riley Leonard, although the big-time injury concerns there, but he's got him. Their defense should be legit. But does he have playmakers to be the number five team in the country? That's kind of my question with that one.
Yeah, in this grouping of teams, I like Ole Miss to be higher up at number five. I like Jackson Dart, and I like what Lane Kiffin has been there. And, like you said, he seems like somebody who's actually built a program, and it's time to bring that up into the forefront. Notre Dame, the injury to Riley Leonard does really concern me, and the extra surgery that he had to get in spring, I don't know, it feels like Cam Rising last year at Utah, that like, oh no, don't worry, he's gonna be fine, he's gonna be ready, it's all gonna be good. But he, even when he came back last year for Wake, he wasn't the same guy. Sorry, he played for Duke, right?
Yeah,
Duke. Yeah. When he came back, but he wasn't the same guy when he was dealing with the injury, and now you go under the knife. I don't know. It just makes me nervous about them, and if they don't have Riley Leonard, I'm not sure what they're going to be there, because that has been a concern in not just the Marcus Freeman era of Notre Dame, but for a long time, because they can't bring in just anybody because they care about their academic requirements so much. And so do they always have the top line playmakers on the outside? I mean, when you see him play Ohio State, you can see that extra bit of talent that is on those kind of rosters compared to Notre Dame's.
Real quick, we'll round out the top 10 here. Number 8, Michigan. Number 9, Alabama. Number 10, LSU. Higher or lower for those teams there?
It's too high for Michigan. I know they have a lot. They lost so much. New coach, all of it. Like, I think it's too high for them. But look, I understand the respect, but I think it's too high for them. As I mentioned, I'd have Alabama up higher. LSU, to me, they could be a little bit of a fall. Last year, they've covered some warts with Jaden Daniels' Heisman season that program has.
Yeah, LSU is one. It's like, well, somebody has to be in the top 10, because I don't feel super strongly about the other teams around them to move them up. But I agree with you that I just don't know everything that's going on with them. But I could see LSU having a drop off with losing Jaden Daniels and not being able to replace that kind of production.
All right, we will grill the hateable Bill Bender. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
News, opinions, and insight, all before breakfast. Rise and shine with Morning Juice.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Us.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's head on to the Brian Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Conversation with our great friend, the hateable Bill Bender, sporting those joints. How dare you put the Buckeyes second in your publication? We can't stand for that around here, buddy. All kidding aside, before we get into the rankings and kind of the fun we have this time of year, I'm curious if you have given thought to how you are going to rank teams at the end of the season, when you have the two conferences who have gone very different ways in terms of scheduling. What I mean by this is the SEC obviously played the hits. The Big Ten did not. Ohio State's schedule is not very robust. Texas's is. How are you thinking you will view that by the time this season? Wins, losses, quality wins, losses, et cetera.
Okay, so let's play that out. State goes 10-2 like they normally do. He goes 9-3 against Tennessee's schedule, which is probably harder than Penn State. Penn State actually has one of the easier Big Ten schedules. Does the committee do what it normally does, with the exception of Florida State, and take the team with more wins, or do they honor that tough schedule? I'm very interested to see that, because there are some SEC teams, Florida, Oklahoma, Big Ten teams, USC and Michigan in particular, that have tougher schedules than other teams.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the Michigan schedule this year, no wonder Harbaugh got out of town. Like, they got Texas coming to town. They're playing all the hits at Michigan this year. So it's not the entire Big Ten. But I do think it's something that's going to frame, and Sankey talked about this at SEC Media Days. All of his athletic directors did, saying, hey, we deserve credit for who we're playing. And we've warned our listening audience about this for years, that they're going to say our 9-3 is better than your 11-1. Now, it's not going to be a thing. I don't think that's going to affect. It's not going to affect Ohio State, I don't think, at all. But I don't think it'll affect the Big Ten schools as much as it could affect the ACC and Big 12. And we saw a harbinger of things to come, I think, with, as you just alluded to, Florida State last year.
So, yeah, and on top of that, 7 at-large bids. Let's assume Notre Dame takes one. How many do we think the Big Ten, so that's half your playoff field, the 4 plus the group of 5 qualifier, who's always going to be the 12th seed, by the way, and if Notre Dame gets in, there's half your field. I strongly believe that the other 6, at least 5 will be SEC and Big Ten teams. Probably all of them will be SEC and Big Ten teams. And I'm getting a little pushback on that. Well, what about a second Big 12 team? I just keep saying, look at the schedule.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. I think one of the things that you know, you and I are aware of, and I think people around the sport are aware of, but there is a consolidation of power at the top between Petitti and Sankey, and they don't need to let people in their sandbox to play. I think they think they've already given up enough. I'm with you. I see no chance for a second Big 12 based on those teams and just kind of the breakdown of it. And a second ACC, I think, would take like 12-1 Clemson, and that's when 12-0 FSU, or 11-1 Clemson, and that's when 12-0 FSU would be the other team in. I think it would take a brand, and I think it would, like, Clemson would have to, like, beat Georgia, who they play early.
Right, and last year, like Louisville, for example. No knock against Louisville. Jeff Brom did a fantastic job last year, but they lose the ACC championship game. If we were in a 12-team model last year, they're not going to the playoff. They would have taken Penn State or Ole Miss, who just missed the playoff or lost 2 games to Alabama and Georgia last year. So I think they're going to dominate this format. I don't have a problem with it because of what you're looking at. And the other thing that I think needs to be a discussion, I know Austin Ward agrees with me on this one. I think they should go to 10 conference games in the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
With that many teams, play more conference games, make more money, less chance for goofy tiebreaker at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think we're headed there, that it'll eventually get there. I think the SEC would have done it this year if ESPN would have opened up the coffers and paid for an extra conference game. I think the SEC would have done it this year. The Big Ten absolutely should do it. There's absolutely no reason for Ohio State to play the first month of the schedule that they're playing with the 12-team playoff. It makes just no sense at all. As you were going through this, you start to do kind of your big picture look at this team, and if you're like me, you're looking at this stuff all the time, and I know that you are. Is there a team that came across maybe better than your initial thought was? And is there a team that maybe has more questions than initially you thought they did?
Yeah, we did a new top 25. I mean, NC State is kind of doing their annual people love them again, and I was trying to find out why. Well, their offensive line should be good. Defensive line should be good, and Grayson McCall's played a lot of football. Team that I like more is Oklahoma State out of the Big 12. I probably overlooked them a little bit. Entire offensive line coming back, Ollie Gordon, no Oklahoma and Texas to worry about anymore. I think Gundy could thrive in that environment in the Big 12. And then a team I probably don't like as much. I mean, you know, I went back and forth on a couple teams. I mean, the top 10 is pretty solid. Ole Miss, a lot of people love. They do. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I would not underscore how much losing Quinshon Judkins is going to mean for that team and how much he adds to Ohio State's offense in return. I think that's a big loss, and they still have an easy schedule. But every year when you have that easy schedule team, they end up disappointing. And they could be a team that it could go south with a couple losses.
This is blasphemous in this market. I'm aware, but I'll say it anyway. You guys have Michigan 8. If Sherrone Moore goes and they're ranked 8th with that schedule and who he has to replace, he's National Coach of the Year, is he not?
Well, I think if they go 9-3, they would have an interesting playoff case. And I'm starting to go the other way on them a little bit in terms of, I mean, they could beat Texas. That's not a slam dunk win for Texas going up to Ann Arbor, playing against that defense and that running game. You just never know. Texas also could beat them handily. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they're going to be in the mix, but there's enough left in the cupboard for them to be competitive. But that is a brutal schedule, and they're not going to go undefeated against that schedule. There's just too many potholes.
When you talked a little bit about the Big 12 with Oklahoma State, when you think about let's stay in the Big 12 for a second. Do you see any scenario where Deion Sanders is at Colorado after this year?
He's never not coached his kids.
Yeah.
So I would put it that way. And I know you and I have done the coaching thing. I've actually not coached my kids before, and it's more fun in some ways because there's no way of being called dad ball.
True.
Deion, he's never not coached his kids. Shador's going to go to the NFL. Shiloh's going to go to the NFL. I think there's going to be a lot of hype around that team, plus his health. I mean, I can't speculate on health, but sure, it's been out there. So I would say 50-50 he's at Colorado next year no matter what, and some of that will be predicated on how much hype they generate this year.
In terms of the new ACC teams, is there, I mean, the most intriguing thing for me, just because of the history of it, and I'm of an age where I just love the dirty underbelly of the sport, and there's no better representation of that than SMU. They're playing in that conference. They're bringing a pretty damn good team in. They're playing in that conference for free. They are getting no money from the television, none of it. They're paying their own freight. What do you make of that experiment, and what do you think their chances are in year one in the ACC?
I always tell everybody, for those that are excited about the video game, I built a dynasty with SMU back in the day that was probably every bit as bad as the Pony Express.
Yes, it was.
I love their love their uniforms.
Yeah.
Love them. Love those uniforms. Love that they got their seat at the table that way. I don't care. It's kind of like your Willy Wonka line. It doesn't matter how they did it. The point is they did it. You know, they're there. And they've got an offense and in a market that I think they're going to make some noise in the ACC. They're going to throw it around, and it'll be fun to see. So they're one of those teams that leveled up, and I'm actually enjoying it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Hey, I know you're a great fan of the 80s Western classic Young Guns, as am I. I'm rewatching Lost with my 12-year-old, and by the way, he loves it. So if your son's his age too, if you're looking for something to watch, he loves it, and it's a win. But Terry O'Quinn's in that, and he served as Alex McSween, the attorney in Young Guns. And I know this is a deep dive for the audience. Would you have had that he was in his mid-30s when he played that role?
No, and
crazy.
There's no way. But no, and you know the scene where they. He has some good one-liners when they're stuck in the house, you know, before they get out of the house. And, I'll probably have to go watch that again now. Thanks for that. I'm going to have to go watch number 1001 in on Young Guns tonight at some point.
People are always blown away when I say I could recite that entire movie start to finish, every line. I've got it.
You and I could go back and forth. We could even pick characters, I think.
I think you're right. All right, pal. And that one's intentional. Always good talking to you, my friend, the great Bill Bender of the Sporting News. Thanks for your time, buddy.
problem. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
All right, that's Bill Bender, Sporting News. And again, he's got this all, it's all on one page that Bill curated on Sporting News. Like everything you need to know on the college football side of things, it's all there. Three things on a Thursday. Up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Wake up with The Fan. Eat lunch with The Fan. Go to bed with The Fan. Dream about The Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else. The Fan.
After putting up with Dom Tabari for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese, what do you have in the poll?
The Daily Fan poll asks, which Ohio State football game this season will have the narrowest margin of victory? Your choices are at Oregon, at Penn State, or versus Michigan. 74% of respondents right now to the Daily Fan poll say Oregon.
Yeah.
The game in Eugene will have the narrowest margin of victory.
I like that they wrote it, though, as narrowest margin of victory. That it's still a victory. Yeah. Don't worry.
That's the one.
Surprised I didn't put Marshall on there.
I could get close there.
Two bye weeks. Bye weeks are tough. I love a bye week. No chance at losing. Give me. Let's go 11 byes and let's just get to the playoff. Play Michigan and then 11 byes.
Here's what we should do for one of the bye weeks. Everybody get together. We'll have a Bishop and Friends field trip to the Ren Fair. How's that sound?
Did you see there's an HBO series about that?
We tried it. It is weird. And I can't.
Oh, you don't say.
I can't tell like how much of it. Like it's clearly like somewhat scripted, but also still like living in reality. Like, but they're. It has like a through line, and we couldn't. It was like, this is odd.
You don't? Yeah, bet. I bet it is. Let's hit three things on a Thursday. Hit it, fellas.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
All right, number one for me. In the last 15 minutes, there is a Madden trailer has dropped that has the Browns kicking off to the Steelers and Justin Fields returning the kick and then them running a reverse. I think people thought when they were talking about Fields kick returning as a joke, you have to remember with the new kick return rules, he would kind of be perfect for it because there are going to be trick plays off of this. So in the new kick return rules, it's the old XFL rules, and I guess what UFL probably uses too. You basically make one guy miss and it's a touchdown. That's what it is. So if you can break one tackle, it's a touchdown. Well, who could do that better than Justin Fields? Very few. Second of all, you could run a reverse off of that where a quarterback would pass it back to the other side and you're gone. So I this is probably them having a little bit of fun on Madden. But he would actually be a dangerous weapon in the return game if they used him.
Special teams coordinators finally get to get really creative this year.
Yeah.
First one for me. I don't know. Have you guys ever had this situation where you're like, yeah, you know you're being upsailed by the clerk or, you know, somebody at a cash register or whatever, and you just go, you know what? You're right. Because yesterday I was at we were in like the old Hilliard and we were walking through Crooked Can to see what little places they had there right now. And one of them had like baked goods and they were Little Debbie inspired, but made professionally. So I was like, ooh, do I get the oatmeal cream pie or do I get the, they were calling it a galaxy brownie, but it's clearly supposed to be the cosmic brownie. And I went up to the counter and I asked the lady, I was like, oh, which one's better, the oatmeal cream pie or the galaxy brownie? And she says, I'm not even going to tell you which one. You should just get both. And I was like, you know what? Go, yeah.
Can't argue with that logic.
Sign me up. Give me both. And they were both delicious. She's like, they're not going to last long. And she was right. I ate both of them yesterday.
Bo, piggybacking off your first thing, the PFF guys, Sam Monson and Steve Palazzozo are playing Madden right now. The new one. And I think it was Steve returned an onside kickoff for a touchdown.
See?
Like, so they're playing this as it goes. And it's just... it's a really good job interneting by the EA Sports team to have that. Also, shout out to Dustin Hopkins, who I guess is the first player shown.
He is. Yeah, D-Hop was the first one shown. Number two for me, the raccoons are back. So, again, like my words sometimes are so hollow on my family. But we reached a pretty strict conclusion that if you leave the garbage outside, the raccoons will come, despite Buddy Garrity's attempts to chase them off the property as valiantly as he did, which led to him being number one in the household family power rankings. Last night, he's barking like a maniac, and I look out the bedroom window, and sure enough, there's a couple of them back. Now, the big guy wasn't back. The Don, he was not back. He sent some soldiers.
The lackeys now, yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't there, but he sent some lackeys there. They had started a supply chain that was starting. They were kind of run the same operation again. So I go downstairs, and I'm like, good job, buddy. Great. And I look out the window, and I'm like, what are we doing? This is two nights later. We didn't bring the garbage in. Like, it's, if you do this, this will happen. That's where we're at with these raccoons, and my family just refuses to acquiesce.
Second one for me, late kick with Josh Pate's producer, Jesse. He had some research here. Said, how bad was Nebraska's 2023 offense? No QBs throw for 200-plus yards in a game. Only one running back had 100-plus rush yards in a game versus Louisiana Tech. No wide receiver had 75-plus reception yards in a game. Tied last in FBS in turnovers. If they scored 21 points per game in regulation in losses, they would have went from 5-7 to 10-2. Very informative, and yeah, maybe this says good things about the coming season, or maybe it says that Nebraska is cursed and will lose all one-score games until the end of time. Who's to say, but I am a bigger fan of the latter.
Do you think if they could, well, they wouldn't, because financially it wouldn't make any sense, but if the money's the same, they would go to the Big 12 right now, even as currently constructed, yes. Wouldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Go it would just make a lot more sense, right, just go play that, those teams, go stay in that footprint. Mm-hmm. Terry Pluto of Cleveland.com says he's hearing the Cavaliers are going to go with former Warriors assistant Kenny Atkinson. Some media outlets are reporting James Borrego's the guy, former Pelicans, well, I guess current Pelicans assistant. It doesn't matter. Who does Donovan Mitchell want? That's the guy the Cleveland Cavaliers should choose as their next head coach.
Will this stop the consternation?
No.
As if this is going to be some sort of game changer, who the coach of the Cavaliers is next year?
You might have said this earlier in the week, Bo. The head coach in the National Basketball Association. Oh. If Joe Mazzulla's watching The Dark Knight with Jason Tatum, you really think that's the difference in the NBA Finals?
Oh. For instance, like, try to remember who was the coach in any specific LeBron year. You know, like, at the end, you know, it was Ty Lue.
David Black.
Like, you throw out a random year that LeBron was on the Cavs. Like, do you remember who the coach was? No, because you had LeBron.
You had LeBron. That was it. Number three for me. So, watching a little of the College World Series over the last week or so, and It did make me, it seems like the best damn time you could ever have in Omaha, for starters. And it does make me wish and hope that at some point, and Ross Bjork comes from that world, so he knows the importance you can do with baseball if you can do it. Man, it'd be sweet if we had a sweet baseball team. If we had a squad that could go to the College World Series and compete, that's fun, man. That thing is, that's everything that you love about baseball is what happens in Omaha over those 2 weeks.
Last one for me in Old Hilliard yesterday by the Crooked Can. There's like one of those fountain splash pad type things. And because of the weather, there were a lot of people out there with their families. And it was just really fun to see. Those things are very simple. They're just water spigots that shoot up and like kids love the simplest things. And they feel like they're at Disney World sometimes when it's just that. And just watching all the kids run around. It's like, maybe awesome. I could take that into my life. But like, hey. The simplest things can be a lot of fun if you just allow them to be.
Devere Posey's in next with Matty Ice, Rothman and Ice from 12 to 3. They're going to have plenty from the Don Waddell press conference this morning. Aaron Portsline's got a great write-up on The Athletic right now. Jackets are going to keep Elvis Merzlikins heading into next season. Very interesting considering where we are with all of that. But Patrick Laine, though, next couple of days, I think they'll have some serious, they'll have some news on him.
I want to break down from them on Justin Jefferson and Joe Burrow at Paris Fashion Week breakdown of the outfits.
I saw that, and I was going to throw back out my French translator, but I didn't have time.
Yeah, we don't have time for that. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. This is a Fan Action Update.
This NFL Action Update is brought to you by Tipico, gambling promo 1-800-GAMBLER. The Jacksonville Jaguars have the second best odds to win the AFC South at plus 270. Their odds to make the playoffs this season are plus 124 to make and minus 150 to miss. Over-under season win total sits at 8.5 games. And the Jaguars are 45-1 to win the Super Bowl, good for a tie for the 16th best odds in the NFL. For your Tipico Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Center. Good afternoon. I'm Matt Andrews. The Reds dropped the matinee yesterday in Pittsburgh, falling 1-0. Since he collected two hits, Nick Martinez took the loss for the Reds in relief. Reds 2-4 on the trip. Cincinnati is now 35-39 on the year. They're off today. They host the Red Sox this weekend. The Guardians snapped their three-game skid with an 8-0 win over Seattle. Tanner Bibee, splendid, struck out a career-high 12 in six innings. Stephen Kwan and Josh Naylor each homered. Seattle and Cleveland for the series today. A 1-10 start up in Cleveland. The Clippers lost 10-4 last night at Worcester, Massachusetts. They play again tonight at 6:45. This update is sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, give Mark Levy a call at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP or visit him online at sleepbettercolumbus.com.